Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. You know, one of these days I'm going to completely forget to activate the show. It's about 30 seconds ahead. So your show starts in 30 minutes. I'm like, oh, no. So to get the show going, you've got to do a couple things. One, you have to create it, and then you have to actually activate it before you go. And I'm happily studying. I'm reading. I'm having a great time, you know, going over stuff for the show. And all of a sudden, I realize, oh, no. So a lot of running around the last couple of minutes here. So it's quite exciting. It's another fun day at Action Radio. This has been, I think, a very incredible week. I think there's been a lot of, again, tedious bill going over and language things, but I think overall, because of what we did in the last couple of days, starting with Monday, so the last 3 days, starting with the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, that it's turning out to be absolutely wonderful, and it's had an incredible impact. I mean, the vaccine mandate for OSHA is dead. I've got a couple of sources on that. They talk about, well, we still believe, we thought we were doing the right thing, but you know, yeah, it's dead, it's gone. There's going to be they may issue a permanent injunction at some point to try and, finalize it. But for all intents and purposes, it's not going anywhere. And now there's a massive lawsuit. There's like 34 different states and corporations. And it's just they put it all into the Sixth Circuit. I think that was just done randomly. I think they just, draw circuits out of a hat kind of thing. And they try and decide where this is going to go. Thank God it didn't go to the Ninth Circuit, out in Wacko Land, out on the left coast. Otherwise, we would have real problems because they'll just make up stuff. I mean, they don't care. Although occasionally they have better rulings, but even so, you never want to trust the courts with your liberties, because they can just as easily stop them as maintain them. The fact is, your liberties are in the Constitution, and those don't change. And government can't touch those. And so that's where you really want to go for your source of liberty. So it's been interesting to go over that, and then of course with the rally in Tallahassee. And folks that went there, and we're going to hear from Cindy Cagle in about 30 minutes. And what she talked about, well, actually what she's going to talk about is the busload of folks that went up. So she was there with that busload. And apparently they were actually lobbying in the halls of the state capitol. They got to speak to legislators, which I didn't know was going to happen. I'd love to go up myself, but I'm big on the one-on-one meeting thing, not so much on the rally. So I'm curious what actually was accomplished. As it turned out, and Gene, who's been listening to all my tedious bill going through, as it turned out, I honestly believe that the bills that came out of Action Radio on the Parental Bill of Rights that actually made it rights instead of authorizations by law and prohibitions by law, notwithstanding, and the public health laws in the state of Florida, Section 315, no, 385, excuse me, 385, subsection 315, that are public health law amendments to make the whole public health department and officers subordinate to the Constitution, both state and federal, and individual rights. I think both of those bills were far superior to anything that came out of the legislature of Florida in this so-called special session that just happened over the last couple of days. And I think we went over the bills pretty carefully. There was the general bill, which sucks because it put all the onus on the employee to justify their medical exemption, their immunity exemption, their sincerely held religious beliefs, and things like that. And it put no burden on the employer whatsoever. There was no burden on the employer to justify that their vaccine policy made any sense, that it worked, that it wasn't dangerous, that it was effective, that it actually impacted safety in a positive way, as opposed to what we believe is a negative way, so that bill was a total that should have been completely rewritten or abandoned. It should never have passed. The one on public records, keeping your claims of exemptions secret, that actually does make sense. That was a good bill. The bill that there was the one on the state OSHA plan to form a plan and spend $1 million, total pork, total waste of money. You've already got a state OSHA. You can approve OSHA. You don't have to have a plan to make a plan to spend $1 million on a plan to make a plan. if the plan to make a plan costs $1 million, how much is the plan going to cost? And so you go from there. And then the last one, which is probably the worst of all of them, was because it's so deceptive, is this idea that they have stopped the public health department from mandating a vaccine by any means necessary, because they haven't. All the bill did, and this is Alex Andrade, my own House member here in Milton, Florida, you know, in the panhandle, in the upper northwest corner of Florida, our own, and he was one of the sponsors. He sponsored the House bill, and of course the Senate bill was sponsored by a senator, but it was the same bill. All they did was remove the word vaccine or vaccination five times from the authority, from the enforcement authority of the public health department. But what they left were the words treatment and by any means necessary. Well, if the public health folks can authorize a treatment by any means necessary, and they have a provision where law enforcement can be, called in to enforce any provision of the public health department. Okay, that's another thing that I took out in our bill. Basically, it's a medical dictatorship and totalitarian state. Because if anybody could be ordered by any means necessary to take any treatment that the public health official wants, what if they want, vaccine passport tracking mechanisms, further gene therapies, you know, all kinds of other things. I mean, who knows what they're going to order? Because they have the power to operate by any means necessary. Well, no department in the world needs the authority to operate by any means necessary. That's an absurd grant of power. Yes, I know it came in after 9/11. Yes, I know it was when the Patriot Act came in and other ridiculously powerful things that government has no business having the power to do. But think about that. I mean, I just want you to imagine that you're home asleep at night and the SWAT team comes bursting through your door with a public health official. They strap you to a gurney. They tie you down. Your arms or legs are tied down. They gag you and they give you a shot of who knows what. Well, that, by any means necessary, that treatment was ordered. Why not? I mean, it's in the law. They can do that. Okay. So unless you take it out of the law, it means they can do it. And this ridiculous proposition some of the Democrats were saying, that, well, we might need it in the future maybe, so you better leave it there. That's insane. Why don't you leave a provision for a secret police? Just leave a provision for gulags. Oh, we don't plan to do it now, but, you know, in the future, there might be an emergency. We might need to do it. I mean, it's the same kind of logic. You know, and so this is what if they want to separate vaccinated from unvaccinated, or as I call it, vaccine injured from DNA normal. What if they want to separate the population? Segregation. What if the new Jim Crow weren't skin color, but whether you've been injured by a DNA shot required by the government so they can make money? And think about that for a minute. Now, that's exactly what's happened. This is the new segregation. This is the new racism. The new racism is you've succumbed, whether you've complied, whether you've given up your rights to buy back your quote normal life. I mean, that's what they're doing. You know, so unless you fundamentally change those laws are on the books, and if they're on the books, they can be used. Don't think for a second that a law on the books, you know, is only there just in case. If it's there, it can be used. If you don't want it to be used, then you have to take it off the books. It's just that simple. Now, can they still do it anyway and form a totalitarian state? Sure, they can. But it's a lot easier if the laws are already in place, because then they use that as a justification. So it's up to us to change the laws, to put the laws in there that we comply with, we consent to be governed by. Excuse me. So what was I saying? But that's what's important for us to do, and that's what Action Radio is all about. So let me bring Gene in the conversation here, and as someone who's witnessed my rantings and ravings in excruciating detail, you know, I mean, I'm hoping it's helpful, but I need Gene as a sort of like a gauge to kind of tell me. Of course, folks can do that too. Give me a call 215-383-3832. But considering what we covered on the show, Gene, compared to what you heard on the regular news, can you give me a little compare and contrast and, the what you thought of what we were doing here?
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
I can't give you a compare and contrast because I don't listen to mainstream news, so I don't know what they cover. I do have to say, though, this is all good and well, but did you hear about the AFL-CIO, they're suing because they want the vaccine mandate to cover all employers?
I haven't heard that.
Yeah.
And who are they suing to do this?
I'm not sure who they're suing. I think the government.
Well, that's interesting. So, okay, so all right, if that's the case, that's what happens. Now, for folks that don't know how Washington looks, the AFL-CIO building is like one, maybe two blocks away from the White House. Okay, they practically have an underground tunnel. The amount of when I was doing my internship in Washington, the amount of times I met with staff from the Carter White House, okay, Jimmy Carter was president at the time, and members of the AFL-CIO. In the various different divisions, manufacturers, steel workers, auto workers, you know, the different heads of the unions within the AFL-CIO. That's American Federation of Labor, Congress of Industrial Organizations. They merged, I think, back in the 30s. Okay, so it's the premier labor union lobbying group in the country. And so they're both a union and a lobbying group. The Teamsters would be number two. And the Teamsters are huge. That's all the truckers, a lot of airline personnel. The pilots have their own union, but some pilots are Teamsters. Health workers, and we talked about that too. And Gene doesn't have a lot good to say about that. It's pretty interesting. But those are the unions. So if a union is suing the government, then that means that means Brandon's insurrection has already coordinated that. You know, already run back and forth. In fact, you could take a drone and watch the people, you know, running back and forth between the White House and the AFL-CIO. They've already worked this out ahead of time. That is a pre-planned suit. And so,
I don't know who they're suing because they didn't say. Maybe they did, and I didn't pay attention because I was more concerned with what the person was saying that people in the workforce are they want the vaccine. I'm like,
well, then get it.
I don't know who you're talking to.
Don't make anybody else do it. Yeah,
exactly.
That's like projection gun control. In other words, people who don't feel safe with guns want to take guns from everybody else. Well, it's just, you know, if you don't feel safe with guns, that's fine. No problem with that. Just don't get one. Okay. You know, stay a victim and we'll, you know, and run to your neighbor, you know, hope that your patriotic neighbor will protect you when somebody invades your home. But otherwise, shut the hell up. Go away. You know, same thing with vaccine. If you don't want to get it, or if you want to get it. And then shut up about it. We don't care. Just leave the rest of us alone to choose for ourselves. That's the problem. You know, but this idea that you have to get a vaccine, you know, to protect other people is the same as putting sunscreen on so that someone else doesn't get sunburned. I mean, you know, this herd immunity thing is not vaccine, folks. It's natural immunity. That's what herd immunity is all about. There's nothing to do with vaccines. Vaccines only affect the person. Otherwise, everybody wouldn't have to get one. You know, vaccines, you know, were like the public good. Then maybe 1 in 100 would get one and the effect would, you know, cover everybody else. But it doesn't work that way, does it? Because they want everybody to get one. So if everybody has to get one, then there is no herd immunity. There is no blanket protection. There is no doing for everybody else if everybody has to get it. They contradict their own argument. Gene?
No, that's true. But it's so interesting because you talk about the mainstream media. There's, you know, they always say there's so many people that are not watching it, so many people watch it and listening to Newsmax and all these other sites. But I tell you, there's still a lot of people that really believe in the narrative that you need to be vaxxed. I was watching a clip of you on Facebook yesterday, and the person that was supposed to be the, I guess the Republican maybe figurehead, couldn't be on there because she wasn't vaccinated, and you can't get on the show unless you're vaccinated. And so she was telling them, you know, she's got a medical exemption. She, you know, can't get it because of a medical exemption. And they didn't want to hear it. They were just like how selfish she was and all this stuff. And it's like, you know, there are some people, I mean, I don't have any medical reasons not to get it. I just choose not to get it. But there are some, and I know people.
There's a lot.
I know some people, but I don't. And I can't lie about it and say I do have a medical reason. I don't. I don't have anything that would put me at a risk except what I believe. But that doesn't mean it's medical. I mean, because I know people that they get it, they're allergic to certain things in it. That's huge. Or if you have an immune compromised system, some people are told not to get it. I don't have that. And so they didn't want to hear that. And I don't know what her reasoning was, but she talked to her doctor, and that's what they said was the best reason or best thing not to get it. But these people were horrible. And so there are still people out there and that believe that you need the vaccine. I mean, I can't tell you how many patients I have and how many workers I work with that tell me, you know, people just get the vaccine. We'd have been done with this long ago. I don't think so, because if 80% of the population in this country is vaccinated, then we should not continue to have people dying on the rate they're going, and we should not have as many people having it.
No, you're absolutely right, and I mistook what you meant at first, because when I think of reasons not to get it, I'm thinking of logical, you know, reasons in my head why not to get it. But you're talking about actual medical conditions why not to get it, and that's different.
Yes, and some people have medical conditions. Yeah. And just so you know, I cannot log into talk radio on my computer this morning. I'm still trying. It won't let me log out to log back in to a new. So it just, I push log out, and it doesn't do it. Turn off my computer, go back in. So we're having some wonderful technical things going on today.
Yeah, you know, and it's you're not alone. You know, all the hosts, all the reporters who call in, who we have direct connects with, sometimes, you know, everybody has problems. I have problems occasionally. I had problems for about my first 6 months. you know, trying to figure out how this whole thing works. Now I've pretty much got it, got the system, so I can do it. You know, I've got the distance from the microphone. I've got the gain at the right level. I've got the requisite number of windows, but not too many. You know, so there's a lot to this that you don't expect. But yeah, so you were logged on. I did see your Direct Connect log on. So it did happen earlier before the show. So you did make it, but we'll figure that out.
I had no sound, so I have to get out and keep doing it until I get the sound. But now I can't even get back into the episode or the.
Okay, well, I'll just stay on the phone. You're fine.
Yeah.
As long as one of us is here, we're okay. You know. But yeah, so I found something on what you're talking about. This is from the postbulletin.com. Not sure who they are. Talking about the new AFL-CIO president, Liz Schuler, S-H-U-L-E-R. Was talking. She's not talking about suing the government, but let me see. The new president said Tuesday that everyone should be vaccinated against COVID-19 and urged AFL-CIO member unions to be a source of quote reliable good information. Well, that's a contradiction right there. If you're recommending everybody get this vaccine with its incredibly horrible safety record, then you can't possibly be for reliable good information because you've already lied. So I don't see anything about a lawsuit. There's nothing about that they want to sue the government to do something. But it wouldn't surprise me if this is coordinated with Brandon and the imposters in the White House, because that's how it works. You know, the AFL-CIO and Democrat presidents, you know, they like I say, there's a reason those two buildings are only like a block or two apart. And that's why.
Well, Representative Massey, yes, whenever it went on Facebook yesterday or this morning, yeah, he was talking to the person directly and questioning that person.
Oh, okay. Well, and they said that there was a lawsuit. I mean, I could be wrong. That's just the article I found. I mean, your sources might be better on that. But if there is a lawsuit, it's because it's already been coordinated with the Brandon insurrection. It's not because they independently thought to themselves, let's lawsuit against the government. The government can't be sued unless they consent to be sued. That's kind of how it works. You know, it's sort of a weird thing.
I don't know who they were going to sue or suing. Yeah. I don't know. I didn't pay attention because I was just more taken aback by why they were suing.
Okay. Well, yeah, because like I say, they got their information all wrong. I've got a couple of articles I want to get to before Cindy gets here from Citizens for Medical Freedom. And I want to hear all about the rally. So that's going to be fun. So we've got up to an hour with her if she wants. Jonathan Mosley comes in at 7:30 Central. She's here at 6:30 Central. It's now, for those of you who are listening live, 6:17 in the Central time zone where I'm broadcasting from. Okay. So here's one that I couldn't post on Facebook because it's natural news. And natural news is an automatic censor. I mean, you'll get a 30-day restriction just for posting something from Natural News. So, of course, I quote them on the show all the time. This is Wednesday, November 7th, 17th. That was yesterday by Mike Adams, who's the editor. And the headline is breaking. OSHA announces it will comply with Fifth Circuit Appeals Court, like they had any choice, and suspend Biden's vaccine mandate. And this is stronger than most of the articles you're going to read. So that's why I'm giving a little bit here. It says OSHA has announced it will comply with the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals order and suspend Brandon's unconstitutional vaccine mandate pending further court action. They actually say Joe Biden's unconstitutional vaccine mandate. They don't even say president. They don't even say administration. I mean, these folks are great, right? The quote is, OSHA has suspended activities related to the implementation and enforcement of the ETS, that would be emergency something standard. I forgot what the T stands for. Emergency technical standard or something. Anyway, pending future developments in the litigation. In other words, if the Fifth Circuit changes their mind, yeah, that's not going to happen. OSHA is now announcing on its website. So actually announced that they're canceling their whole program at OSHA, which is great. That's really great news. Like I say, it's not like they had a choice because the Fifth Circuit ordered it. But it's nice that they actually did it, so they're not openly defying the court like Brandon's asking everybody to do. Article goes on. The Fifth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals ordered the stay on November 12th. Fake White House occupier-in-chief Joe Biden, I love this language, who issues illegal decrees from a mock Oval Office built on an actual soundstage, ordered American businesses to continue to enforce the vaccine mandate despite the court's ruling. Yeah, like we can disobey every court order. And we might as well start doing that. If we can disobey this one, then who's to say we can't disobey any other order coming out of a Brandon court? Anyway, it says the mandate is blatantly unconstitutional and illegal, and the Fifth Circuit granted a stay on the mandate based on, quote, grave constitutional issues it raises. And so apparently, and here's the interesting part, it says no COVID vaccine available in America has been approved by the FDA. People forget that. Mike Adams says, the idea that OSHA could deprive Americans of the right to work based on their decision to reject an experimental, deadly injection that has already killed at least 18,000-plus Americans, and that's from the VAERS, the vaccine something, you know, the victim group, represent gross overreach of a federal agency. No COVID vaccine available in the USA has been approved by the FDA. The agency has only approved the Comirnaty vaccine, and even if the vaccine were 100% safe and effective, it would still be illegal to force people to take it. The fact that Pfizer and Moderna vaccines are still experimental, authorized under an experimental use authorization, not, quote, approved by the FDA, makes the focus of such shots on the American people a violation of Nuremberg codes against forced medical experimentation on human beings. Credible estimates of the number of Americans killed by COVID vaccines range from 250,000 from Dr. Zeb Zelenko. So I got to check on that with Dr. Zelenko. But it wouldn't surprise me if he said that 250,000 Americans have been killed by the vaccine, all right, to over 1.8 million. And that's a projection of the fact that the VAERS, the vaccine, you know, whatever relief, you know, fund, only captures about 1% of deaths. Vaccine mandates are murdering American workers and causing severe economic distress, supply chain disruptions, product shortages, and untold pain and suffering. So they put it right there at the vaccine. It's causing the very problems that people are blaming on COVID. COVID's gone. COVID would have been gone three times. It would have been gone in July of 2020 if they'd done nothing, because it was dying out. I mean, as of April 15th, that was the turning point where natural immunity was taking over and COVID was dying. But then they brought it back with the lockdowns and the masks. And then it was dying out again in the fall of 2020. And then they brought it back in December with the vaccines. And the Delta variant came about from the vaccines, because there was no Delta variant until we had vaccines, okay? You can trace the records. It's right there in the CDC. And then it was dying out again, and so they brought in mandates. You know, it's dying out again. And so they're doing all this other stuff. But, you know, they keep resurrecting this disease from when it dies out. I mean, that's horrendous. Anyway, I found that fascinating. Let's get Gene's actually on the computer now, which is good. So you can join me at will if you want or not. And of course, we're waiting for Cindy to join us in a few minutes here. But here's the thing that really scares me. And this is, well, not scares me, but this is a challenge for us. This is the part that's not being talked about. And it says, apparently, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, the CMS, issues a rule mandating COVID-19 vaccinations for certain healthcare staff. Well, that certain healthcare staff amounts to 16 million people. Okay, this is from the National Law Review. So even though OSHA, even though the Fifth Circuit has already ruled conclusively and decisively that vaccine mandates are blatantly unconstitutional, I mean, there's not even a question about it. Still, the Center for Medicaid and Medicaid Services, the folks that pay the Medicaid bills and the Medicare bills, they're requiring anybody that gets Medicare or Medicaid funding from the government, which is, I think, every hospital and most doctor's offices in the country. I mean, anybody who takes a Medicaid patient or a Medicare patient, right? These people are now dictating that all the staff of those medical institutions, entities, companies, things like that, also have to have the jab. So you thought you were rid of this? Now how is it that OSHA could be ruled? They can't make a vaccine mandate. Right, to cover employees of corporations. And yet, the CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, can issue one for 17 million healthcare workers. There's something really wrong here. Gene, when you can, hop back on the line, and I'm curious what you think of that. But in the meantime, I'm going to
Greg, this has been talked about in, I'd say almost, if not a year, a long time. They've been planning this a long time.
Okay.
Which I don't know how you can... I don't know how you can fight it, because as far as hospitals and stuff, because it's a guideline they, you know, those guys put out. So, you know, those guys, people in charge of Medicare, Medicaid. So, you know, it's all thuggery.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, first of all, never underestimate Action Radio. I mean, to me, it's just a challenge. I mean, I've got several ideas on how to fight it. But before I do that, I need to understand the problem. Okay. And so the problem is I don't know how powerful these people are yet. I don't know how much of it. Well, maybe you can help me out here. So tell me everything you know about CMS and their power over. Well, let me see. I got a quote from a friend of mine who posted on our in our investigation group, and she was talking about the fact that the CMS has total power. They drive reimbursement.
Right.
They handle the the metrics for hospitals, and they set all the guidelines. I'm sure they set the pain, you know, when you get that 1 to 10 pain scale and evaluate how you're doing, I'm sure that goes back to the CMS. CMS makes, the Commonwealth says CMS makes or breaks hospital reimbursement. All hospitals must comply if they want to be paid for Medicare patients, which make up the bulk of our healthcare system. I mean, how much of the system is Medicare patients? I mean, that's socialized medicine.
Well,
I mean,
but you know what? In a lot of places, if you look at county-run hospitals, a lot of time they get a lot of people that don't have insurance. You look at the people, trauma hospitals, a lot of times they end up with a lot of people that don't have insurance. Why? Because most critical of the critical are flowing there, and you know, they don't have an option of where else they can go because of their severity of their accident or whatever. But then it also deals with, you know, with Medicaid, it deals with the younger kids, children, you know, those that are born with certain diagnoses where they qualify, they have, you know, and that's a whole big set of red tape. But if they qualify and they get health insurance through Medicaid, you know, and so that means the therapy places, and not only that, many other places that you maybe wouldn't think would have so many Medicaid patients, Medicare people, they do. And so, yeah, it affects a lot of places.
Interesting.
Because
yeah.
Why? Most elderly have it.
Oh, yeah.
Medicare,
don't you get it at 65?
You know,
doesn't Medicare kick in at 65 for everybody?
Yes, yes. And so what happens, not everybody after that age has Medicare because of other, you know, insurances they already had and got to keep. But for the most part, you talk about elderly, they almost, I don't want to say almost anybody, everybody, but a huge majority of them do have the Medicare. Yes.
Well, sure, I will at some point, unless I get, you know, filthy, stinking rich from Action Radio, which is always the thought in the back of my mind. But,
and what I
want
to tell people with the Medicare, too, be very careful what you select, because they think, oh, this one is cheaper, I'm going to do this. You get what you paid for. And if a lot of people with the HMO-type things, if you need special services, they only cover very limited stuff. So I'm not going to get into that, but just be very careful. Don't always think that cheap is better, because I've had a lot of patients that we couldn't treat them after a point because they can't afford to pay out of pocket and their insurance runs out.
So Medicare is not mandated for over 65. You don't automatically get it, but you can select it. Is that what you're saying?
Well, there's many different options with Medicare. You know, you can, many different choices you can make, put it that way, for it.
Okay.
Yes.
But you have to pay for it? Does it come out of Social Security, or how is it paid for? I thought it was a government grant.
There's some fee. I don't know how much they have to pay, but it's the reason I say that's why people choose certain or certain ones, because certain things are cheaper. And then if they're on a fixed income, you know, they have to decide. It's like, should they pay $5, $10 more a month for that, or are they going to put that $5 towards their electric?
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. That's why you never want a fixed income. All you folks on retirement, you know, get back to work. Create something. Do something interesting. At least I hope so. Here's, you know, obviously we have to explore that whole thing, because that's not an area I'm well-versed in. And so you certainly have much more knowledge of this than I do, which is going to be good to as we go forward here. What I'm thinking of in terms of the Medicare, Medicaid, this whole CMS thing, is we need to take the politics out of it. We need to take away their power to make decisions. And I think the best way is always a privatizing some kind of a scheme, just as we talk about education. You know, we want to get the government out of education and stop their indoctrination centers. We want to create a situation where people have, you know, if you're wealthy, or you know, we might want to have a tax deduction for any money spent for education. And I hate to channel people in terms of income, so we have to think this through really carefully. But if you had, say, just as an example for now to start with, if you had the wealthier folks had a tax deduction for education costs, you had the middle income folks had a tax credit for anything spent on education, and the lower income folks had a voucher for education, you know, you put everybody pretty much on an even playing field in terms of being able to get access to education. It wouldn't be strictly based on income, where the really rich would go to Phillips Exeter Academy and the poor folks would have to go to their local, you know, Democrat run, you know, substandard plantation school. And the same thing, I think, would apply to health. Anything the government takes over is something that we need to seriously look at in terms of how do we take the politics and the control out of it. And the best way, seems to me, that there should be no reimbursement, that people should have, again, tax credits, tax deductions, and vouchers. There should be a similar system to education where that people would be in charge of it, and there'd be price disclosure on these bills, and there would be no CMS. You know, there would be no Medicare system because it wouldn't be needed, because everybody could make their own individual choices, you know, based on, again, tax credits, tax deductions, and vouchers. What do you think?
Right. Yeah, exactly. But then when you talk about medicine on a whole, so many people want socialized medicine in this country. No, you don't. You don't want socialized medicine.
No, you don't.
I agree that the people that can't afford insurance, those that are disabled, mm-hmm. the elderly, whoever, they should get it. Mm-hmm. But the Obamacare, I mean, I've been in the healthcare profession for over 30 years, and so mm-hmm. I've seen a rapid deterioration in medical stuff since Obamacare went through. And I think it's just a travesty how much people are paying in premiums and how much they don't want to pay. And I just think it's sad, very sad. And you talk about, oh, well, we needed to do this. No, you didn't. If this was such a great system, then why aren't the people in the government having our same system? But they don't. The politicians don't.
Well, they never do. They never do. They have their own system. So we need a system like they have. And the best way to get that, I think, is that you put people in charge. And, of course, the argument then is going to come up, well, you're talking seniors. They might not be able to do this. Well, they have power of attorney. They can have their family members take care of them. They can have, you know, expenses put on their behalf. They're going to have to anyway. The older you get, the less you can do anyway. And so, but in terms of active seniors, you know, who are still fully functioning, somewhere between 65 and whatever age they are, they're like 90-year-olds running around running corporations, big corporations. In fact, Trump talks about his friend, I forgot, is either Overstock or one of those other companies. He's doing just fine, you know. So, you know, but the thing is that the people, you have to give it in control of the people. So if the people are spending the money through a voucher system or tax credits or tax deductions, that means the control is with them. If the government is spending money on their behalf, then the control is with the government. So now I've always felt, I got Cindy on the line here too, Cindy of Citizens for Medical Freedom. I'm going to make her line live and I'll invite her in a second. But I've always felt that, you know, the healthcare system, I don't want a socialized system of government control, but I do want a system where we can, you know, give vouchers to people so they can pay for their own healthcare. Because if we can afford $6 trillion wasted in Afghanistan, if we can afford $5 trillion of Green New Deal infrastructure nonsense, that's $11 trillion. I mean, how many people in this country could we treat very well, you know, healthcare-wise, with vouchers alone for $11 trillion? You know, that's one-third of the national debt. Okay, so there's a staggering amount of money in this country. How many military bases do we not need? We've got 700 military bases outside the United States. How many do we really need? 4, 5 maybe? You know, there's so many things we could do with treaties and alliances and shared bases and shared military and things like that. We don't need 700 military bases around the world. You know, the aircraft carrier, I hate to say this, folks, but it's an obsolete technology. Okay, the aircraft carrier is obsolete. It's old, it's slow, and it can be destroyed by a single missile. All right. Well, they're fairly fast, but the point is they're huge. They're huge targets sitting out there. They're great for show, but they're obsolete. You want to save money? Get rid of aircraft carriers. Have small missile cruisers and things like that. So there's so many things that we could do and fund our healthcare in a way that still allows people to make their own decisions through a privatized voucher system, but still have people not suffer because they're poor. There's no reason in the country that can spend $11 trillion on wars and Green New Deals, $11 trillion, totally wasted. Okay, that can't insure people and can't give them the money to take care of their own health care for both insurance and prescription medicine and everything else. That makes no sense to me. And that's still a free market solution, but we're not going to have people suffer simply because they don't have a whole lot of income. And some things are really expensive. I had open heart surgery. That's really expensive. There's no way in hell I could have ever afforded that if I had to pay for it. But I have insurance.
Right. And
okay?
just think if they wouldn't be given each illegal that came through here, $450,000, their family.
That's another problem.
You know,
exactly. That's not the problem.
But
yeah.
The thing
let's
is, what
Cindy
I want to get
in.
At, too, is in this country, particularly in this country, mm-hmm. we do such a poor job of trying to get people to stay healthy or become healthy. We
That's
always are, like, reactive. After the fact, mm-hmm. then we step in. No, we need to teach people to take responsibility of their health. And I think mm-hmm. so many people don't realize. They're like, oh, well, you know, that's okay. I can eat this. It doesn't matter. Yeah, you can eat it today, but tomorrow you may be paying the consequences. And so what we need to do is have people make smart decisions on what they eat. And mm-hmm. also, I think, hold the how would you say, food places, manufacturers and all that accountable too. It's like for all the sugar they put in stuff. I mean, if you look even at yogurt, how much sugar they put in yogurt in this country versus other countries. Why? To get people to eat it. You know, it's like all that sugar is not good for your body. And
yeah,
I would hate to think
really
how
good,
much
though.
Money we spend. And I used to know that figure, how much money we spent, you know, because of diabetes and stuff like that. And I know people that had diabetes from when they were a kid. Yes, there are some. But a lot of them, as we get older, it has to do more with what we eat.
Yep.
And so it's like we, each of us, need to become empowered to take care of our own bodies and treat it like a temple versus, oh, I can just eat this because this is what I want to eat, and you're not going to tell me different. Well, no, nobody's going to tell you different, but it's a sad thing. You talk about the vaccine. Okay, they want to deny people that don't get the vaccine when they go into the hospital, but it's okay to then work with people that didn't take care of their bodies all their life.
Yeah, I had to give you the hotel bell because Cindy's on the line. I don't want to cut into her time too much. But, you know, you're absolutely right. And I don't want to cut you off permanently on this, but I just want to hold it for now. Because this is why I have Paulette on. This is why we're going to do a ton with nutrition. And health is different than mainstream, you know, commercial drug-induced medicine, things like that. But I want to get Cindy Cagle, who is with Citizens for Medical Freedom, who was at the rally. And, hey, thanks for the bus reports. Those were fabulous. We had Shannon and Patty called in, and you know, I don't think anybody else had live reports from a bus on its way to Tallahassee. That was absolutely wonderful. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. And I'll just piggyback off of, is it Paulette?
Jean's our producer. Paulette does the health thing she's doing, you know, foods that don't kill you. We're changing her name for a but that's on Tuesdays. Yeah. You can join up, by the way. Feel free. Yeah.
I just wanted to piggyback off of the sentiment about healthier lifestyles. COVID would have been a perfect opportunity for the government to, you know, discuss that and make that a focal point as a countermeasure to COVID. Nothing's been said. You don't hear – it's almost like you're not allowed now to call people out for some of the health problems they have because of the personal decisions they're making. I think it would look a lot different if the government put half as much money into promoting a healthy lifestyle as they have forcing a experimental use vaccine.
You know, we've said ever since Dr. Fascist came out with his vaccine thing, this is back in February of 2020, you know, right before I announced on March 2nd of 2020 that chloroquine kills COVID, there is no pandemic. You know, we've got a cure. We don't need vaccines. I mean, we've been broadcasting that for almost 2 years now, that all roads lead to vaccines. It's the only thing they're considering. And you and I, we need to put a press release out on this. We need to, or at least start a program. It's something maybe Citizens for Medical Freedom might want to do. I always believe in the positive, right? So complaining, you know, there's lots of groups out there complaining this is a problem. You know, we need to do something. Well, here's something we can do. So if you guys have nutritionists within your group, start posting alternative health. Start posting immune-boosting foods. Start posting exercises that improve your circulation. I mean, all these kind of things. Let's do a positive thing. And then let's go back, because now we have the state legislature has passed four pretty inadequate bills. I mean, they I honestly believe, and I talked about this at the beginning of the show, I honestly believe the two bills that came out of us at Action Radio here, the public health amendments and the parental rights amendments, are so much stronger and so much strengthening of constitutional rights and individual rights, way beyond anything conceived of by the entire Florida state legislature, that we can now take this interim time between now and the regular session and start going, okay, you've gotten this far, let's go the rest of the way. Let's start introducing these bills, and it needs to go to the governor, it needs to go to some other folks. You know, if you guys could do press releases, press conferences, you know, start attracting some local media, we form a coalition, you know, we get with Santa Rosa Volunteers and other groups, and Gulf Coast Patriots, things like that. We start working together. And I think this is something that'd be fabulous to work on is, you know, immune stuff, because we know about vitamin D3, vitamin C, quercetin, the non-prescription form of hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, and zinc. We know about those. And I take those to protect myself from the vaccine injured. I didn't worry about COVID. I never really worried about COVID, but I worry about the vaccinated people, you know, affecting me much more, which is interesting. But immune things, I don't know if that's your expertise or whatever, but, you know, let's start getting into that. Let's start talking about, and that'd be a great thing for this report too, ways to prevent protect against COVID, all viral infections, the flu in general, antibacterial, you know, so you don't need antibiotics, you know, any of those kind of things. And, of course, diabetes is the biggest one right now. And as someone that gained a huge amount of weight after open heart surgery, and then unfortunately kept it due to the stress of starting a new corporation, in other words, Action Radio, now I'm on an intermittent fasting program where I stop eating about, you know, actually it's about noon now. I'm getting ambitious. So, you know,
wow.
I'm at 4, right?
That is
so about 4 o'clock in the morning. So breakfast is at 4 for me, right? And so lunch is like 10 in the morning, you know, 9 or 10 after the show. And then I'm done. Then I don't eat until the next morning. And it's working. I'm losing like, I don't know, 5 pounds a week. I mean, it's great.
Wow.
You know, so
good
it's
job. But, congratulations.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I don't like to talk about myself personally all the time here. But the point is that personal choice make a difference. And it's already, I've already just been to the doc and he says, damn, this is great. Keep going. So, you know, so this is so important. I think that we can fight, we can actually fight the government by making ourselves healthier and saying, screw your mandate. We don't need it.
Yeah.
We don't need the vaccine because we have, not only have, do we have natural immunity normally, but we have an enhanced natural immunity because we're building up our immune system. That might be a great counterbalance. You could open up a whole new area for us to explore. There you go.
Well,
big
and
notes.
I know a lot of the doctors
the
with Panhandle Doctors, they lean towards some of the more holistic treatments. So, I think the resource is there.
Bring them on the show. Bring them on your report. Invite them on. I'm serious.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll work on that.
Yeah. So you're going to be such a great reporter in a short time. You're going to be amazed what you can do.
I don't know
studies.
About that.
Oh, yeah, you'll be fine. Well, you don't have to. I mean, it's, you know, I always like to open the door for as much opportunity as possible.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great – because I do think there should be a focus on that, even prior to COVID, but definitely since COVID, and nobody's talking about it. Nobody's talking about a lot of things. I being in Tallahassee, I don't know if it was intentional or if it really is the situation, but I found the climate there to be what we knew and what we were living in last year with COVID. It was really surprising. You didn't hear the narrative, and even listening yesterday in the special session, you didn't hear a whole lot about my mind just blanked out. Early treatment being effective. It was as if that is unknown. And also that with the vaccine you can get and give COVID, it was like we're 10, 11 months behind in what we know.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I want all your perceptions of what you think. Now, did you talk to legislators personally, or is this just listening to the debate, you know, online, or tell me everything. Tell me all about the rally.
Unfortunately, we didn't get to talk to our legislators directly. Now, I've had direct conversations with Jayer, so I kind of knew his position, but we did stop in to talk with Senator Broxson because I feel like there's a lot of work to be done there.
Oh, yeah.
And unfortunately, he had just stepped out for lunch, so we
just stepped
we didn't
out.
Get to talk.
Didn't he just step out on a meeting too? He does a lot of just stepping out, doesn't he?
I think we just missed him, is what she said. But
you know,
we
should call him
his
just step out Broxton. You know, Senator just stepped out. Okay, thank you. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. People wrote, you know, notes their concerns and whatnot. For him to read when he got back. And
has
then,
he responded?
I haven't heard anything. And, in fact, I need to reach out to his aide because I did talk with her directly. And I'd be curious to know, you know.
Yeah, follow up. Keep following up.
Yeah,
don't go away.
Yeah.
If, as long as they know you're not going away, they'll respond to you. If they think you're going to go away, they'll never talk to you again because there's like two piles of people that talk to legislators, those that don't go away and those that do. Okay.
Well,
so
you know, it's interesting.
Yeah.
Somebody mentioned, I think it was Patty mentioned that, you know, they're supposed to take your name and your address so that they can verify you're in their district. None of that was done. And someone that's ignorant to this process, you know, I didn't realize it would have been important to make sure that information is being documented. While he had a lot of notes and information left, I guess there's no real record of us being in there.
Well, let's make one. You know, so that's actually fascinating. That's great to learn in terms of lobbying. So lobbying, you know, and like I said, I was talking to some folks about that. You know, this is something that I'm hoping to make you all lobbyists, and not talking about going there in the 3-piece suit every day and you know, showing up and taking them out to lunch and spending a gazillion dollars. That's the bad lobbyists. That's the corporate special interest lobbyists. But citizen lobbyists. So in other words, you contact on a regular basis your local representatives. You ask them how things are going. You say, we've got some bills. See, and the whole with our citizen legislation, you can then say, well, we like what you did so far, but we think this is better. You know, and give them a bill and say, can you support this for the next time? So now, if they get, once they understand that you have not only legislation, but better legislation than they're writing, I'm not sure what effect this is going to have because no one's ever done this. So, you know, you'd be where we call the cutting edge of freedom. You're doing things that have never been done before by presenting bills, you know, citizen legislation. It's so important, I believe, for other people than me to do this. You know, other folks, other groups. And every time you talk to a legislator, you should say who you are and what group you represent. Because the minute they think you represent a group, now they know that you're talking about more than just yourself. And numbers are everything. So you want to inflate your impact on them as greatly as possible. First thing you do is you say you're, you know, Cindy from Citizens for Medical Freedom. Or you can call yourself the director, administrator, whatever you are, whatever title you want to give yourself that you know that fits, because that makes more sense too. Because all of a sudden, well, I'm talking to the head of the organization. Oh, okay. And then you say,
that
and
I
we
can
represent.
Identify as that, but
yeah,
but
and then you can say
Cindy from Citizens for Medical Freedom.
Yeah, and then you say, and we represent thousands of people who are concerned with their medical freedom. Oh, now you've just multiplied your importance. Okay, this is all psychology. There's a whole psychology to lobbying. So trust me. This is my first rodeo. Yeah, but I'm doing this for a while. But all these little hints is very subtle, okay? But you just say who you are, and if you drop in and say, well, you know, we represent you know, thousands of people who believe in medical freedom, many of whom are in your district, by the way, and you know, and they vote. How am I doing? You know, so all these little things help. So you just keep dropping these hints and just kind of work your way through. But I think if especially if your group and other groups, you know, around the area, you can get behind, and we're really hoping the Republican groups, and Dave and I talked about this, David Jones of Santa Rosa Volunteers talked about this yesterday. We need them to come out publicly supporting citizen legislation, because once that happens, once the GOP, you know, the geldings, as I call them, once they actually get on board and start, you know, providing alternatives, you know, and I'm not sure, you could tell me if you were able to, or I don't know, did anybody in the group present our bills to any of the legislators, or have you sent them in communications afterwards?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
Not that I'm aware of. I kind of pulled Patty in because I felt like she was more.
Patty's great.
I'm Patty Burke with Gulf Coast.
Yeah, this is
Patriots.
This is Patty of Gulf Coast Patriots, and so just for folks to know, it's one of our local Republican groups. But they
she's
seem
a
to be a little more
woman.
Seem. A little stronger, a little more independent than some of the other groups. And so we're hoping to get, hoping her Republican group will inspire the other Republican groups and the statewide Republican group. And of course, the national bunch of cowards in the GOP that didn't come out against vaccines until the Fifth Circuit, you know, eliminated them. You know, it's kind of interesting. We got to work our way through that. Okay. But the first thing, of course, is I'm not trying to tell you what to do or force you to do anything, but I present the bills, you know, I wrote them, okay? And so from there, you guys need to talk about them, approve them, see what you think within the group, and if you can support them and send them directly to representatives, I'd be very interested in whatever feedback you can get from that, because now you're giving them something positive. Instead of saying, please solve this problem, what you're basically saying is, we've already solved the problem. Here's our solution. It's a very different argument. Because you make their life easier. Because these people, not only do they not write their own legislation anymore, in most cases, they don't even read it.
Well, and that's the impression I got. Well, in fact, I think somebody, maybe it was Representative Williamson, told me, you know, pretty much when they come to special session, they already have a kind of a sense of what they're going to agree on. So they have the bill or bills drafted and get an idea of what the climate is on it before they even come to special session. So it was my understanding or my impression that they had, you know, what they were going to present and work from on the table far before they actually opened the session. And from there, it just became the negotiations of getting it to a finalized state. And that meant more concessions. But that was the understanding I had. And I'm learning kind of as I go and mm-hmm. might not have it right, but that's,
no, you're absolutely right. In fact, I want to talk about it, but I want to get, before I prejudice you with my, you know, cynical nature on this, but tell me everything that, what were your perceptions before you went into this in terms of, did you think they were going to write legislation during the session, actually debate language, or what did you think before you got there? I'm curious.
You know, I don't really know, but I did think that I thought that both sides were coming to the table with their mm-hmm. own points of view and requests, and yes, that they worked from there. I didn't realize it was so short. I thought it was kind of like a court battle, if you will.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, so it didn't. I didn't realize that they kind of had to have their T's crossed and I's dotted before they actually opened the session, because it's a very limited time, and they want to kind of know where everyone stands before they get to that point. I thought
actually
they
don't
they
have to do
both,
that. They don't
well,
have to have it all done ahead of time. They choose to do it because they don't want controversy. They don't want debate. They don't want to have you know, things on their live screen internet debate, you know, showing conflict and showing them not looking as dignified and you know, as they pontificate about things that they already know. And so most of those debates that you saw were basically that show. Okay, so let me give you the cynical interpretation of what really happened. All right. The governor made a proclamation, but before he made a proclamation, he'd already negotiated with the head of the Senate and the head of the House to work out a deal. Somewhere, some weekend, some country club, some coffee house, some you know, island in the Bahamas, somewhere, they got together, you know, months ago and worked this out, maybe like 3 or 4 months ago. And they figured it all out. Then the Senate president and the Speaker of the House presented the bills to their members. And they said, basically, this is it. These are the bills we're presenting during the special session. You know, read them, get on board. And that's when the whips, the, you know, the people that actually whip the votes in line. And the Republicans wanted the Republicans to vote this way. But but in the process of forming that legislation, the lobbyists come in. So the lobbyist's main job is not after the legislation is written and to get it passed. The lobbyists, not only do they influence the writing of legislation, in most cases, they actually write it themselves. I mean, this could have been written by healthcare providers. It could have been written by, you know, various government. It could be some folks in public health. It could have been written by the chambers of commerce. You know, you have no idea. Bloomberg, you know, that has a huge – Bloomberg, you know, writes our gun legislation, believe it or not. The anti-gunner writes the gun legislation and then pays for the speaker of the space for the Senate president to make sure that that's why our gun bills have sucked the last, you know, 15, 20 years. Right? Talk to Jim Dykes, one of the directors of Florida Carry, does our gun report Fridays. So the cynical thing is this was a done deal. It was already enough time. The bills that they did had minimal impact on business. And you'll notice, and we went over this very carefully. I don't know if you had a chance to hear this. But it was yesterday we went very carefully over the general bill that puts all the onus for exemptions on the employee. The employee has to prove they have a sincere religious belief. The employee has to prove that they've already had COVID and they're immune, and they have to have a doctor certify it. The employee has to prove that they have a health condition that prevents them from getting this. You know, it's all the – but nowhere – and we talked about this yesterday – nowhere in that legislation was anything on the employer to prove that the vaccine actually works, or anything like that. Yeah,
that was the observation I made listening to the hearing yesterday and being in Tallahassee. You know, they believe or either project that they believe that the vaccine is effective. And you need it to protect everyone. There's no discussion about the fact that you can give and get COVID as a vaccinated individual. And I feel like we're being conditioned to accept discrimination based on that information. And that's information that the CDC has already acknowledged is not the case. So nobody's been able to tell me why it's necessary to only test unvaccinated employees, and that that should be a condition of this mandate exception. We won't force you to get the vaccine, but we're going to treat you differently. And there's no discussion, no mention of why we're going to treat you differently, no justification.
You know, that violates equal protection, the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. You could actually amend our bills. In fact, if you go through the Action Radio Public Health Amendments bill, which you guys have, and if you can find a section where you want to put that in, where any, you know, if you just write up a section that says any required testing will test all people equally, vaccinated, unvaccinated, you know, that would make sense. That would, because that actually, that is a violation of law. That's a discrimination. You know, you could probably take that to the EEOC, you know, equal
opportunity.
And nobody's
opportunity talking about it.
Well, you just did. Okay, so now let's see.
Well, and you make it sound much easier than it is. I think you have a lot more faith in me and ability, my ability.
I do.
Than you should.
I'm not wrong very often.
That's the question I'm going to present. In fact, today at the Board of County Commissioners meeting, I'm going to try and mention that, because I know there was a discussion at the last meeting about Santa Rosa Medical Center and their mandates, and they were able to skirt the issue saying that, no, they're not mandating the vaccine, and they're correct. They're not mandating the vaccine, but they're mandating discrimination, and nobody is asking why that's necessary, why that's justified. If vaxxed can get and give COVID, there is no justification for treating anybody differently. And why are we allowing it? Why are we being conditioned to accept that? And with Santa Rosa Medical Center, we have the ability to put a little pressure on the CEO, because it's county-owned property.
Yeah, that's an excellent point for the meeting. If you bring it up, let me know.
Okay.
I think you're absolutely on the right track. You know, we've got two major things to do here. See, Action Radio is, if nothing else, is a brainstorm session, you know, to come up with the ideas that no one else has even thought about. And that's why we go deeply into these things. And you never know what's going to come up. So you've got two great ideas. One is to focus on immunity. If you guys can do, put out some immunity information for us, I would take that to the county commission too. Say, look, there are many ways to fight this. You know, vaccines are one method. And why would you have a vaccine for a pandemic that's open? You know, that's the first thing.
Yeah, and early treatment works.
Yeah, exactly.
All of these other precautions aren't necessary when you have early treatment and you have a 99.9% survivability. There's no justification for discrimination.
Not only
but
survivability.
Nobody's talking about it.
Yeah, but not only survivability, but most people don't even have symptoms.
Yeah.
Everybody's been exposed to COVID. That's the other thing. So people forget. Everybody's been exposed multiple times in the last 2 years. In fact, there was a briefing given to Republican lawmakers back in March of 2020. Okay, and this person, I've still got the information. I have a whole file on early COVID articles, you know, the accurate ones before they started scrubbing and redoing everything. And so one of the things that happened was there was a former U.S. public health official who went to one of the big pharmaceuticals, ended up working for a Japanese pharmaceutical, came back to Congress and said, look, everybody's getting exposed to this at some point or another. Mm. It's an airborne virus. Everybody gets exposed. In fact, Gene can probably tell me, you know, more about this than you can too. And I'm sure you have folks in your organization that know airborne viruses, everybody gets exposed. Everybody gets exposed to the flu viruses every year. All of them, all 5, 10, or however many come by. Everybody gets exposed to those. How many people get the flu? Well, those that are susceptible to it and vulnerable to it, and a lot of times those who have had the flu shot. But if an airborne virus, if everybody's been exposed, everybody's already been exposed. Why would you have to mandate a vaccine for something everybody's already been exposed to and either got it or didn't, or got it and didn't know it, got it and had mild symptoms? I had, I would say, mild to moderate. I mean, I'm almost positive I had it back in January of 2020, before you even knew what it was. I had this cough that wouldn't go away for 2 weeks, and I was like, what the hell is this? Well, I slept for a couple of days, and I was fine, you know. I got a pretty good immune system after 8 years of, you know, being a tour guide in San Francisco, meeting people from literally all over the world. So I've been exposed to every country in the world I've met, you know, and I breathe their air. Okay, so I'm, you know, so I got a great immune system. But anyway, and even then I still got sick for a few days. But, you know, so what? What the hell? All right. So, but I think, you know, you're on the right track here. I think this is a brilliant a thing to bring about. If, and you know, a really declarative statement, this is what I say, you guys might want to start putting out press releases, and I've just started doing that too, but put out a press release saying, look, if COVID vaccinated people can transmit and get COVID, why is there a vaccine mandate? It's no different than people who have not received the jab, except for the fact
that people
received the jab.
Well, and what they'll say now is there is no mandate because it's been paused, but
it's policy.
There is discrimination.
Yeah.
And we don't
well,
have,
it's a company.
What's that?
Well, it's a company policy.
Yeah.
So they're discriminating at the company level, not the government level. Although CMS, the Medicare folks, and we're going to talk a little bit about that too, but I think Jean has a comment for you as well. Jean?
No, I was going to say something, then I lost my train of thought as you guys continued to talk. So maybe it'll come back to me.
Sorry, Jean.
You know,
I know the struggle.
I was going to say that, you know what, this mandate or whatever what just happened, you know they're going to go back today, if not already, and they're going to put, you're going to do something else. This isn't over yet.
I truly believe we are being conditioned. And now that they've put the train in motion to take the measures they're taking to either coerce employees into getting the shot or discriminate against them, now they're going to pull back and say, oh, okay, well, maybe we don't need to force companies to get their employees vaccinated. But you know the employers are already on board and they've implemented these policies. Mm-hmm. I really do think it's to kind of stop momentum on our side, on the community side. It's a game. I believe that it's a game. And this is a well-planned step in what they're doing.
Well, here's something to think about, too. First of all, you know, when people think we're all losing our minds here because we lose our train of thought, we cover subjects so quickly and so many that I have trouble keeping track a lot of times. But here's a question that you might want to ask to your group and of your legislators. Why are companies maintaining these vaccine policies? Workers can be fired for not complying with what's now just a company policy if the legislature has already passed four bills preventing vaccine mandates on the job. Why are they still doing that?
I think they follow the money.
Okay. Goes back to CMS.
Well, yeah, and I think just many other different things. You can't tell me there's not monies involved somehow from Fauci. Fauci can give money to whoever, whatever cause he wants. So, I think there's definitely money patterns. I mean, for making kids wear masks in school, supposedly they get money for that.
Oh, really?
We got to trace the money. Cindy, can you stay after 7? Can you hang around for a few minutes?
Just a few, because I got to prep for the Board of County Commissioners meeting.
Oh, okay. Well, in fact, you can call us back tomorrow or Monday if you have more details. You don't have to wait till Thursday on that. Well, let me just ask you really quickly then. Tell me what you know about CMS, the Center for Medicare, Medicaid Systems Funding, and how much influence they have on things like mandates and, you know, remdesivir in the hospitals and some of the other horrible things they're doing. Because I want to start looking into that more and more. Any insights for us?
You know, I don't. Up until, you know, a month or so ago, I didn't realize they had as much influence or control as they do, but it does seem like they're the center of the storm in dictating policies.
Okay.
And I've heard from people at Sacred that, they are getting, they're being given incentives from somebody, if that's Centers for Medicaid Services, I don't know, but there's financial incentive for making your employees, 100% of your employees vaccinated. There's incentives for testing. I haven't verified that myself, and I don't know exactly where it's coming from.
Yeah, okay. Sounds like a big kind of commission meeting, so I don't want to keep you much longer. I just want to make sure that we've covered everything you wanted to cover this morning. Do you have any other topics, insights, things from the rally, and plus contact information, anything else you want to share before you go?
Well, I'll just say this Saturday we're going to be rallying in front of West Florida because they're now implementing the policy, not that they're forcing their employees to get vaccinated, but if they don't, then they're going to discriminate against them. So
how are they discriminating?
They were quick to jump on board.
How? Tell me about this discrimination. I don't think I have a clear idea of that yet. What are they doing?
Well, because they're only subjecting the unvaccinated to testing. And I know folks like Navy Federal are charging higher premiums, and I believe that they're going to start charging the employees for the testing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a way to treat them differently, and to me that's mm-hmm. discrimination. I mean, we have for our traditional childhood vaccines, we have exemptions granted, and you don't have children in school being treated any differently. Nobody in the school knows that child is unvaccinated. They're not wearing a scarlet letter or putting mm-hmm. the corner in a classroom. So why are we doing that with COVID? But it's now being adopted by all of these employers, and it seems to be acceptable for sure in the eyes of our legislators in Tallahassee, but even mm-hmm. with our Board of County Commissioners. And I don't understand it. Like I said, I haven't been given an answer or a justifiable reason for it.
Yeah. Can the healthy, unjabbed health workers, are they discriminated on which pay?
I'm sorry?
Well, in other words, we'll call them the unvaccinated for convenience sake, but healthcare workers that have not had the jab, are they restricted in terms of patients they can see? Are they restricted to like non-public duties or things like that, non-patient duties?
I know that... yes, I don't know particularly with West Florida. I'll have to relook at that. I got a copy of their policy, but okay. I know places like Baptist Hospital, their policy is written to segregate employees in the cafeteria. They can't sit with vaccinated employees. Rosa Parks has to be rolling over in her grave.
Hey, segregation is segregation. This is the new segregation. You know, it's
yeah.
every bit as bad as racial segregation. This is health segregation. Okay?
It's the same thing they did in the World War II.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's...
Well, this is what the Nuremberg codes were all about. And you might want to bring those up, too. You got a bunch of good points for the county commission and pretty much everywhere. But we need to work on immunity. We need to work on this discrimination. We need to have we need to come up with some kind of non-healthcare worker discrimination policy. And based
on
the 14th Amendment.
Well, it would just be, to me, it's very simple. You mm-hmm. you give medical and religious exemptions, and that's the end of it. I mean, that's how it's handled with exceptions to any other vaccine
mm-hmm. That makes sense.
For healthcare workers. They weren't,
yeah.
you know, they were getting exemptions to the flu shot, and there were no other conditions to their exemption. But now suddenly for COVID, we've got to create this divide of the unvaccinated and, you know, kind of put the spotlight on them, educate them, penalize them financially. We're not doing that for any other vaccine. So nobody's talking about it.
Then we look at the state civil rights codes and laws. Look at state anti-discrimination laws. And the federal ones, the biggest one, of course, is the Civil Rights Act, the EEOC, and the 14th Amendment, Equal Protection Clause. That's where I go for that. But the state probably has some. And you've got members in your group that I'm sure could take a look. And we'll see if we can get Gulf Coast Patriots looking up also. Look up the discrimination laws and the civil rights laws and see if you can find something. And if it doesn't cover healthcare workers, then we're going to write one. that's kind of what we do here. But
and it's not
there's
just
another
healthcare workers, it's any, because like I said, Navy Federal is doing it, GE is doing it. We can't accept that we're going to treat all of our employees across the board differently because they're unvaccinated. This isn't limited to just healthcare. Now, I will say the Board of County Commissioners argued that because they are healthcare workers, that makes a difference. And, you know, maybe you can argue that point, but I would argue that it wasn't that way for the flu vaccine. And mm-hmm. we know that the vaccinated can give and get COVID based on the CDC's own wording.
Yep.
That kind of dissolves that argument. But, yeah, when you've got Walmart employees or maybe federal employees, Home Depot employees being mm-hmm. treated differently because they don't have a vaccine, explain to me why that's acceptable to everyone. Because to me, it sounds like a civil rights violation.
Sounds like it to me, too. Let's call it vaccine segregation.
Yeah. Conditioning.
I'm putting big notes to myself here. We didn't just talk off the air. Let me let you go for now because I don't want to impinge on your meeting too much. Let me check with Jean first, too, see if she has another question for you. And also if you want to make sure you give your contact information or any other information you want before you
okay.
go. Jean, do you have another comment for Cindy?
No, I don't right now, but just thank you for what you're doing.
Oh, thanks, Jean. You're welcome. It's a community effort, and we're still trying to get our feet on the ground and gain some momentum. But it, you know, it's a slow process, but I do believe it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, Saturday from 4 to 5:15 this Saturday, we're going to be on the sidewalk in front of West Florida Hospital. Join
where
us.
Is that?
We need the number.
We have a worldwide audience. You better tell people where that is.
Oh, in Pensacola, Florida, and I will give you – well, I was going to say I'll give you an address. I don't have that handy. I'm sorry.
Well, people can look that. That's okay.
Check out our group.
Give me the information.
Citizens.
I'll post it. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome.
And where can people
citizens
find it?
Citizens for Medical Freedom.
Yeah. Citizens.
On our Facebook group. On Telegram and Gab, and it's Citizens, and then the number 4, Medical Freedom.
Yeah. And just look
or
for
you can email
West Florida.
C4MF at protonmail.com.
Yeah, you better give that again. I think I interrupted you.
Oh, okay. C and then the number 4MF at protonmail.com.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. And, again, people, look up West Florida Hospital, Pensacola. You'll find it.
Yeah.
It'll be hard to
do.
And the nice thing is this is podcast, so if people miss the information, listen to it again. We've got a timeline. Just go back and click and get the information again. That's the beauty of podcast.
The power of technology.
Isn't it great? Well, listen, this is how we're going to share our stuff. But we need to start looking at at some anti-discrimination. If the laws already exist, we need to use them. If they don't exist, we need to write them. And so that's something we can talk about. That'd be a great project. And you're not alone. I mean, Citizens for Medical Freedom, the various Republican groups, hopefully, will inspire them. Gulf Coast Patriots, a group I want to explore. Santa Rosa Volunteers with David Jones. You know, I want to bring in the gun groups, you know, the gun stores, you know, all these folks, we're going to get a coalition of activists. Right here in Santa Rosa County, Florida, we can have one of the most active and independent and ideally free counties in the country that we can serve as a model for other counties. And they can go, I want to do what Santa Rosa is doing. And that's where I want to get to. And we've got the people here to do it because you've got a ton of veterans and patriots and conservatives and freedom-loving Americans of every kind you can think of right here. This is the place to do it. And so let's keep doing what we do, and we'll talk more off the air and see what we can accomplish for next week.
Sounds good.
All right.
Y'all have a great day.
Yeah, go get him at the county commission.
Thanks.
Bold.
We'll do. I'll try
be
our best. We'll do.
All right.
All right.
Thanks, Cindy.
Greg.
You have
Bye.
A great day as well.
You too, Jean.
There we go. Cindy Cagle of Citizens for Medical Freedom. And here's someone who didn't start off, you know, thinking she was going to be an advocate. You know, a lot of this is being forced on folks, the healthcare workers. They didn't plan to be here to have to do this. And so it's really interesting. I mean, I do it because I love it, and I love the challenge. And I want to see what it's like to be a truly free person. And that's my motivation. But people that didn't go ahead, yeah, you know what I'm getting at.
I was just gonna say, in life, we so often end up where we're supposed to be going, or in the direction we're supposed to be going, by mm-hmm. circumstances and things that come up. And this is a great mm-hmm. example of that.
Yeah, sure is. Yeah, and look at the groups that are coming together. Citizens for Medical Freedom, Gulf Coast Patriots, Santa Rosa Volunteers, and that's just in this county. you know, and there are other groups across the country, you know, that are doing their best, and parents at school board meetings, and people that are running for office. You know, the amount of non-lawyers running for office is staggering right now. Veterans, church people, educators, parents, you know, it's really cool. All right, let's go. We have been to, I got a few minutes here. A couple of things I want to do before Jonathan Mosley gets here and we start talking about Steve Bannon and other issues we've got our live chat. And I should mention this every day. Live chat is here. You just go to, you can see it at the bottom of our broadcast page. You can then get yourself a free account. I believe it's on the top left, but you'll find it. Anyway, so get yourself a free account. With Blog Talk Radio, and then you can participate in live chat. And our regular visitor, our contrarian, is Bumpin' Jack 5. And some Bumpin' Jack 5 has a bunch of things which are usually not true, and let's kind of go over them here. And so the first comment is, giving vouchers are no different than giving subsidies, which we have now with Obamacare. No, that's not true. Subsidies are government-controlled. Vouchers are individual-controlled. So that's the false statement there. Second one, unvaccinated people are 5 times more likely to get the virus, which is the reason. I don't believe that for a second. But that's not the point. The point is that vaccinated people shouldn't be able to get it at all. I mean, that's the whole point of a vaccination. Or minimal. And the truth is that the people who have received the jab, who are what I call vaccine injured, they're shedding spike proteins. The other thing is their immune system is actually horribly damaged, because in order for the messenger RNA to work, they have to disable part of your immune system to even allow your body to accept it. And then it starts cranking out trillions of cells of spike proteins, and that's what's clogging up your arteries and various organs, and it's actually giving you COVID. So they give you COVID in the hopes that your body will teach itself how to not get COVID. Well, the nice thing about having an immune system is your body already knows how to do that. So they're giving you something they're mandating something that your body already knows how to do. And the simple fact is this thing is dying out. It would have died out 3 times already if not for the government bringing it back with stupid things like these experimental vaccines, which are killing people. Anywhere from 18,000 to Dr. Zelenko's 250,000 estimate. I'm going to take a look at that because I find that very interesting. And then, of course, says vaccinations are not a protected class. The EEOC won't do anything. Well, for now, maybe. You know, we've got vaccination segregation. We've got medical segregation going on in this country right now. Right? And it's happening on the job. It's happening everywhere. It's happening in places it shouldn't be happening, per the 14th Amendment, Equal Protection Clause, and a bunch of other things. So this is something that needs to be recognized. But you've got an illegal, operation in the White House anyway. So you can't expect an illegal operation to suddenly do legal things, because the fact that they're illegally, you know, usurping the White House, having stolen it, you know, I don't expect them to do anything legal. And so we're, you know, to expect to fight using legal means, a usurpation, an insurrection that illegally got there is kind of a silly contradiction. So anyway, so I've refuted Bumpin' Jack. Bumpin' Jack, you're free to write more comments too. But, and I'll do the same thing. I'll refute those as well. All right, let's go to our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece for this week's Federalist Papers number 7. And I will have the Anti-Federalist Papers hopefully sometime this week also for your listening pleasure. And we'll be back in a bit. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. In Federalist Paper number 7, Alexander Hamilton once again beats the same dead horse he trotted out in his first Federalist Paper, that the Constitution has to be ratified or the states will end up divided in 3 or so groups or will cause other nations to invade us. Upping the ante now, he claims that we will all be at war with ourselves in this paper, and once again the cure is to ratify the Constitution. Ironic again that the Constitution was in full force when the states did divide, but in a unified way against the federal government created by the Constitution and not in the 3 or 4 separate confederacies as argued by Hamilton and the Federalists, but one confederacy of states who were run by the Democrat Party. Be careful what you wish for. Hamilton begins with this question. It is sometimes asked with an air of seeming triumph, what inducements could the states have if disunited to make war upon each other? This is a preposterous question, given that the states were united under the Articles of the Confederacy, and that no states were at war or were, to my knowledge, trying to take each other's territory. So Hamilton asks a question that requires an assumption that doesn't exist. Therefore, a legitimate answer cannot be given. But that's not the point of the question. The point is to plant in your brain that if the states became disunited, what would save the Union? And the only answer Hamilton wants you to consider is the new Constitution. Hamilton also says, "We have a vast tract of unsettled territory within the boundaries of the United States. There are still discordant and undecided claims between several of them, and the dissolution of the Union would lay a foundation for similar claims between them all." Well, yes, the dissolution of the Union would cause territorial disputes, but to use that as a reason to ratify the Constitution, you have to believe two things. One, that there is going to be a dissolution of the Union under the Articles of Confederation, and two, that there will be no dissolution of the Union nor any territorial disputes if the Constitution is ratified. Both of those are impossible to argue as connected or even probable individually. Therefore, the argument for the Constitution from the Federalists is based solely on their fertile imagination of what they think will scare the people who would vote to ratify the Constitution the most. If this is in fact the case, then the Constitution was argued from a huge pyramid of ever-increasing lies designed to channel all thinking to a predetermined outcome without real examination, because the building block evidence and arguments of the Federalists crumble at the slightest scrutiny. They knew that, but argued it that way anyway. Kind of sounds like the government position on COVID since early 2020. Hamilton concludes, "From the view they have exhibited of this part of the subject, this conclusion is to be drawn, that America, if not connected at all, or only by the feeble tie of a simple league, offensive and defensive, would, by the operation of such jarring alliances, be gradually entangled in all the pernicious labyrinths of European politics and wars, and by the destructive contentions of the parts into which she was divided, would be likely to become a prey to the artifices and machinations of powers equally the enemies of all of them. Divide and conquer must be the motto of every nation that either hates or fears us." At the end of this Federalist paper, Alexander Hamilton has tied together every preposterous proposition he is making with the hope that enough bogus fears will be grouped together, and the simple weight of numbers of so many ridiculous assumptions will somehow, as a group, give them credibility. Divide and conquer. I wonder if he would have used race like it's used today, if he could. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page One. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7777. 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it. Action Radio. Part of the ADHD Radio Network. The ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. Cool. Okay, we're back. We got about 3 minutes before Jonathan joins us here, and maybe 4 minutes. We'll take a look. It's been fascinating so far to kind of go over some of the medical things. We're going to do a lot of legal stuff, and then we've got Claire Lopez joining us at about 45 minutes after the bottom of the hour. And we'll be talking about foreign policy, foreign affairs, things like that. I had an idea. I might even run it by Jonathan as well, but this is definitely a Claire Lopez idea. And I posted this on Facebook a bit ago that Taiwan, I was thinking about Taiwan. I said, how can we defend Taiwan? Well, Brandon's not going to do it. The federal government's not going to do it. The Geldings aren't going to do it. Taiwan could get lost to China. So it's up to Taiwan really to defend itself. So we can't give Taiwan nuclear weapons. We can't give Taiwan, you know, a whole lot of stuff, but we can give Taiwan our AR-15s. And so I came up with this idea to give Taiwan 500,000 AR-15s. If rich patriots and gun companies that made AR-15s and the various gun groups like the NRA, you know, we just kind of ship them over there and distribute them to the gun clubs and, you know, or some way to get them to people who are most likely, we don't want to send them to the criminals, obviously, but for anybody that has an interest, and I don't want the government controlling them either, obviously, but civilian arms. And the model that I came up with for this was Switzerland. Everybody knows that Switzerland was neutral in World War II. Well, you're wrong. Switzerland was not neutral in World War II. Switzerland was armed to the teeth. The Nazis did not invade Switzerland in World War II because the Swiss were armed to the teeth. Okay, so you want to talk about where an armed population works. Now, granted, they have mountains too. I mean, Switzerland, I've been there. It's absolutely beautiful, and it's mostly mountainous. It's really hard for armies and tanks to roll over Switzerland because it's all mountains. But even so, you know, the Swiss are all armed. They've been armed for 400 years. You know, and so Switzerland hasn't been invaded in about, well, maybe it's 500 years now, but Switzerland hasn't been invaded in about 500 years. Why? Because the entire population is armed to the teeth. You know, everybody's got, I don't know what the current policy is. In fact, they were thinking of changing it a while back, but they all have fully automatic weapons. In most of the homes in Switzerland, they have a fully automatic weapon. Okay. So you want to talk about, if gun control were necessary, then these people, you know, if the guns themselves turn people into evil people, then the Swiss could have all killed each other because they're all armed. No, that's not the case. These are patriotic Swiss, former military, because everybody's in the Swiss military. You know, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing either, but not in our, in our politically correct PC, you know, milquetoast army. But it's an interesting thing, something that we could talk about, that if we could find a way to ship, ultimately, I would say 2 million. I think the population of Taiwan is 6 million. If you had 2 million AR-15s, which we could crank out here pretty quickly, you know, this is America. We can still make stuff. But if we could, especially if Taiwan subsidized it and paid for it and bought them, you know, yeah, 2 million AR-15s. You know, and with the idea being that China, they can walk over Taiwan. I mean, they can nuke Taiwan. They can destroy Taiwan. They've got a huge multi-million, you know, person army. I mean, they can obviously invade Taiwan. and take it over. But if you had 2 million AR-15s, could they hold it for very long? And I would say no. I would say the cost would be so prohibitive to the Chinese military with two million plus AR-15s in the hands of regular citizens, you know, non-uniformed, just regular, you know, folks of Taiwan. I think it might make it prohibitively costly, just as the Nazis didn't invade Switzerland, you know, convince China that it would be prohibitively costly to send, like I said, they could break the defenses, they could crush the military, they could do what they wanted, but they couldn't stay in the country because they'd be continually shot by the Taiwanese. You know, it's just a thought. Anyway, Gene, you like my idea? What do you think before Jonathan gets here? I think, civil defense, let the people defend themselves. We will call it the Freedom Rifles for Peace or something like that. Curious what you think.
I think it's, yeah, that's good, yeah.
Yeah, because it's not us doing it. We're just giving them the arms, you know. And we just say an AR-15 and 1,000 rounds of ammunition, 500 for practice and 500 just in case, you know. And with that many arms out there, you know, if they killed enough, you know, Chinese invading soldiers invading their country, they could take their arms. See, people forget, too, that a lot of armies survived by confiscating the arms of other people, just as the Taliban. You know, they were given $82 billion worth of our stuff. You know, in fact, it would have been – actually, now that I think about it, it would have been a better plan to take $82 billion of stuff that left to the Taliban, our enemy, you know, and given it to the Taiwanese, you know, in defense of their homeland. That would have made a whole lot more sense, now that I think about it. But, yeah. Just to let the people defend themselves. And this is how the Swiss do it. This is how the French did it in World War II, the French resistance. You know, that wasn't the French army, folks. That wasn't the French government. That was regular citizens with private arms. So the private French citizen defended France. The French are brave people. Don't think for a second that the government represents the people in terms of bravery in France. It doesn't. You know, neither did the army under really bad leadership in World War II that were so cowardly because of what happened in World War I. But the French people resisted, and a lot of them died for it. You know, a lot of them were captured by the Gestapo and other things happened. But the French, you know, private shotguns, private handguns, private rifles, that's how they made life miserable for the German invaders in France. Anyway, so we got a little time before Jonathan gets here. Let me see if I can find something else of interest. Jonathan's usually pretty prompt, so maybe something's holding him up here. But we'll get him on because there's a lot of things I want to talk about. Let's see if I can find you another. Here's another article, getting back to our favorite topic here of the vaccine mandate, something I want to talk with Jonathan also. And this is from The Defender. And The Defender is Robert Francis Kennedy Jr.'s organization. And he actually has an organization called Children's Health Defense. And the publication they put out, sneak up a little bit here. That's better. Is called The Defender. And he's talking about the OSHA suspends Biden's employer vaccine mandate following court order. And of course, we know about that. So let me get into the meat of the article. Here we go. In a major blow to the Biden insurrection, my word, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration on Tuesday suspended implementation and enforcement of its ETS, Emergency Temporary Standard, on mandatory COVID vaccination. Under the ETS, employers with more than 100 employees were given until January 4th to comply with the mandate. However, November 12th ruling, you know, that was barred by OSHA, enforces the ETS pending an adequate judicial review. Now, here's where it gets interesting. They said OSHA's latest action does not affect a separate directive from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services requiring employees of medical facilities to be vaccinated by December 6th. And this is the thing I want to look more into. And the reason I want to look more into it is because how can OSHA get the Fifth Circuit complete blocking of their alleged vaccine mandate, and yet the Center for Medicaid Services can keep making their people, anybody that gets Medicaid services or billing, and apparently it's over 17 million people, force them to get the shot. I don't understand that. If it's illegal for one organization in the government, why isn't it illegal for another? So anyway, it says the court ordered that OSHA take no steps to implement or enforce the ETS until further court order. While OSHA remains confident in its authority to protect workers in emergencies, OSHA has suspended activities related to the implementation and enforcement of the ETS. There we go. So it's interesting stuff. It says, and let me see. We've got Children's Health Defense Legal Counsel Ray Flores says this court order must be obeyed, and OSHA has apparently indicated it will. However, I have not seen this news trickle down to employers who, to my knowledge, have not issued widespread pauses on company mandates. No mainstream media outlets were reporting OSHA's news about the suspension at the time this article was published. The case against the Biden insurrection was brought by a variety of entities, ranging from state attorneys general, including Texas, Mississippi, and Utah, American Family Association, and multiple businesses and individuals. As the defender reported Tuesday, there are dozens of lawsuits making their way through the courts challenging the mandates on behalf of teachers, healthcare workers, police, firefighters, and more. And so this is a this is the thing we talked about with Cindy, is like the companies are still pushing this, and it's only a company policy now because there is no mandate, none, except for this one from the Medicaid services. It talks about here, a federal judicial panel on Tuesday assigned at least 34 of those lawsuits. That's like a class action, okay? A federal judicial panel on Tuesday, that was, 2 days ago, assigned at least 34 of those lawsuits, including the one in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals that resulted in OSHA suspending its, ruling, its mandate, to an appeals court in Cincinnati. And this is according to the New York Times. A court clerk for the U.S. Judicial Panel on Multi-District Litigation randomly selected the Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit by drawing from a drum containing entries, for the 12 regional courts of appeal, each of which has at least one related case pending. The procedure can be used to consolidate cases that are raising the same issue. While simplifying the legal dispute, the step also had the effect of removing the matter from the Court of Appeals of the Fifth Circuit, New Orleans. That's interesting. See, the Fifth Circuit's really conservative, so they wanted to get it out of there. And they had there was only like a 1 in 12 chance that the Fifth Circuit would get the 34 extra cases on top of the case that they just ruled on with OSHA. It says this month, a 3-judge panel had blocked the government from moving forward with the rule, declaring it grossly exceeds the authority of occupational safety and health. Anyway, so there you go. So there's another interesting take on this. This isn't over because OSHA's are, arising from this are 34 additional things. Okay, so let me see. I've got more stuff here. Where do we want to go next? I talked about Ascension.
Greg.
Yeah, go ahead, Jean.
My thinking is obviously OSHA doesn't have enough to do the people that work there, because if you can imagine how much time they've spent on this. This isn't just an hour or two. This is government bureaucracy. So they probably spent probably almost since Biden's been in office, they've been working on this.
How
sad. I could see if it was necessary and if the vaccine was really a vaccine and if it really did what it was supposed to. But when you have so many different side effects, people dying from it, and, it's not preventing people from getting COVID. It's continuing to be propaganda and lies is what it is. And it's so sad that is what we've become. And it's not just our country. It's all over the world. Because if you look at it, some countries are even in I say worse shape. That's probably not a really good word to use. But they have a lot less, rights than what we do here. I just think it's so very sad.
Oh, yeah,
and it's nice it's that crazy. People are speaking up, and all I could say is please continue to try to get the truth out there.
Keep fighting. That makes a huge difference.
I wish we could do something to get rid of mainstream media. I mean, all the false lies and stuff they put out there, I just think that's horrible too.
Well, I don't want to get rid of them because that's censorship, because that means they can get rid of us. And so I don't want to get rid of
it's
the
just
media,
the fact
but I want to...
that they should, there should be some accountability. It's one thing, okay, people make up their own decision, but just to spread out and outright lies and by omitting some of the facts and what's really going on, you look at the Rittenhouse case, that's a perfect example of that. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's got to stop. We got to say, put your foot down and say, no, that's not what's going on.
Yeah, the best way to do that is with bigger and better news services that are telling the truth. I don't want to get in a position. And the irony is some of these so-called mainstream media outlets, they aren't actually that big. I mean, CNN has less than 1 million viewers. That's nothing.
But the thing is, it is nothing you can say, but they're still spreading fear and propaganda.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And they would argue, just to show how this argument can work both ways, they would argue that not only are they spreading truth, but they're doing a public service by blocking, what they call misinformation. The irony is what they call misinformation is truth, and what they call truth is misinformation. So they're actually broadcasting lies, saying they're protecting the public from lies by covering up the truth. So I agree with you. It's a problem. I just don't agree with your solution. And so what we need to do is to get bigger and better ideas. And the best way to do that is to share the news sites that are broadcasting the truth. And that would be us, One American News, to a certain extent Newsmax, to Children's Health Defense and The Defender, to groups like Cindy's group, Citizens for Medical Freedom, you know, and look a little deeper than just the basic superficial level, you know. And
yeah, but the thing is, people don't really come on this program to watch and listen to the news. We don't cover that much of the news. It's
exactly.
Like, so it's like, yeah, I think you're right. I think the big thing is to let people be aware. And I'm not saying don't watch certain things, but it's like just the outright deception.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree with you. No, absolutely.
And I think,
in fact,
because how can people make good decisions when they're not even being told the truth?
Yeah. Well, that's the whole point right there. And in fact, it's worse than not being told the truth. They're being lied to, and they're being told that information other than the lies they're being told are lies. I mean, it's a really strange standard. The best way is just more information. What I'm surprised at is why the liberals have such a grasp on the media. You know, they're not inherently richer than conservatives. They're not inherently richer than patriots who could start their own media. I think that, you know, the folks that, you know, on our side of the information are lazy. You know, they're making money. They're running corporations. They're doing fine. But they really need to get involved in media. They need to get involved in the culture war. They need to start putting out more, you know, we need like a conservative Hollywood. You know, and some of the actors are doing it. Some of them are trying to, you know, bring out more things like that. But for the most part, we're not getting the kind of real balance that would happen if a lot of these, you know, in fact, the best thing Trump could have done at this point is actually not run for president. Although he, you know, he could do a pretty good job, but he's still, you know, seduced by the dark side when it comes to COVID. But if he had, you know, Trump News and put major funding into that and broadcast, you know, the real stories out there, I think it'd be very entirely different. Let's go to Pianchi, who's joining us now too. And then I'll get back to a local article. There's a judge here that's doing something really amazing. And I think I wanted to cover that today also.
In
Pianchi.
Florida?
Yeah, actually, with the right here in Pensacola. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Pianchi, let's get your opinion first, whatever you want to talk about. We're kind of free-for-all until Jonathan joins us. He must have got held up with something, which, of course, you know, he's a lawyer. He's defending some January 6th people. That I'm not surprised. Occasionally stuff happens. Yeah. Pianchi?
Hey, good morning, gang.
Hi.
Hey, you know, we need to call for the dissolving of OSHA. Because really, you don't need it. Companies had their own safety personnel that was more acclimated to what the company was doing. I can name some big companies, but I'm not that I've known throughout my career. But they were doing a very good job. Your insurance companies, the ones that carry your work compensation and your general liability, they would often require that the companies that they protected would have a safety program. And your larger companies, they would have a department or a personnel that would travel the job sites, the plants, and make sure that safety precautions were in place. So you really don't need OSHA. Just like the Department of Education. Get rid of them.
Well, there's
just think
no constitutional...
where that money could be better spent.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You don't need them. Every tool you buy has information on how to safely use the tool.
Mm-hmm.
When you're dealing with cleaning fluids, when you're dealing with paint, chemicals, products, they have product data sheets. Those product data sheets explain what to do in case certain circumstances arise. And all you need is a personnel that can read and disseminate that information to the workers periodically at organized sessions on what to do in case of these emergencies. So you don't need OSHA. Get rid of them. The only thing they can do is find you anyway.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. The only thing I would consider is I would be curious how OSHA started and what people thought there was a need for, you know. And there's another interesting thing too.
I can tell
union
you how
contract.
They started.
Okay, well, yeah, do that. I'll get another. Yeah.
Yeah. What you guys, some people working Probably got a little nepotism working in there also. But you don't need the OSHA. The company is doing very good itself. Companies like American Bridge, Bethlehem Steel, and others that erected the Empire State Building, and other the Hoover Dam, and other large construction projects around this country, was doing a very good job of managing their safety. And if they weren't, they could always improve. And then that safety person was a member of the company, a member of the crew, a member of the union, and they was there all the time.
Yeah, that's what we get to is unions. Unions do a whole lot. If you look at any union contract, the major things is working conditions, is safety, is you know, not excessive overtime, is not excessive loads to lift, is not you know, pushing people to a point where they're going to have accidents, because a lot of companies, especially when you have unemployment, you know, workers are replaceable. I mean, this is how they look at people, just like machinery is replaceable. And so you want to get to a place where people are, you know, are valued. And so as long as there's a place for people to sue, for people to go to, say, the attorney general or to a, you know, or to the union or to courts in general. In other words, as long as companies can be sued for unsafe working conditions, you don't need an OSHA. You don't. You know, as long as you've got the ability of workers to have some way to settle their grievances or their injuries or their unsafe conditions other than an OSHA, you're all set. But the union would be the best way, I would think, for a lot of those things. But companies, it's in their interest to be productive and safe. They're going to attract more and better workers.
Yeah.
If they're known as a dangerous company, who wants to work for a dangerous company? Right?
If OSHA come on a job, they have to have somebody to escort them around the job. They just don't walk up on a job and start talking to an employee.
Right, yeah.
That's how that works.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well,
and like I said before, basically all they can do is fine a person. If something is totally egregious than anybody, and those same stipulations you should put on companies, like your whistleblower laws that you have.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't need that. You don't need an organization. Now it's being used politically. When something starts off being a good idea, then all of a sudden the politicians start using it politically, it needs to be done away with. The Department of Education, you don't need that. If you start giving parents the right to have access to those funds that's being expended with your child sitting in a school where they're not learning, it's quite obvious they're not learning. Look at the data. Just look at the data. Then let the parent put their child where they feel is best for them. You don't need the Department of Elementary, Department of Education to tell someone that.
Oh, you don't even need a State Department of Education. In fact, the only thing you really need is, I don't even know if we need local school boards. I mean, a principal can run a private school. You know, that's probably the highest, you know, administration official you need are principals. You get enough vouchers out there. Same. We need to look into health vouchers as well. And we need to, it doesn't sound like there's a reason for OSHA to exist. And there are some companies that do some unsafe things, but there's still recourses. There's your union. There's the police. You know, if they're breaking the law, if they're polluting
the regular,
or creating a, what's
the
regular
that? Common police don't need to be on the job site. Yep, you don't need that. You just,
but if someone
company has their own safety department.
Yeah.
Major companies do. Smaller companies can also, as required by their insurance. Smaller companies have to have insurance. If you have so many employees, you have to have general liability in case you mess up somebody's car that's driving down the street or tear up somebody's house adjacent to the project you're working on. And you have to surely have workers' comp insurance in case a worker is injured on the project, on the job.
So actually those things would govern. Yeah, it sounds like OSHA is duplicative. Yeah. It's interesting that I remember back, you look at the labor history, and we do a lot of times Labor Day, I'll do like a labor history show. And there were times when, you know, back in the early days building the skyscrapers, these guys used to walk around on open steel in the high wind. You know, in fact, the Mohawk Indians are especially known for being able to do this.
I used to walk around on the open steel in high winds too. We never fell off.
Yeah.
I'll tell you something else.
Yeah, go ahead.
You work on a project that's being sponsored or supervised by the Corps of Engineers. They have their own safety book too. It's the yellow book. So now you got a duplication going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have duplication, you start running bumping heads.
Yeah.
And that's not good either.
Yeah, and the Army Corps of Engineers is fascinating. They're not of the Army. they're not a Corps as far as I know, and a lot of them aren't engineers. It's really pretty interesting. Here we go. Did you put Bianca on hold for some reason? Let me see if I can bring her back on.
Oh, no, sorry. I want to put me on hold because I wasn't saying anything. Sorry, Bianca, I put you on hold instead of me.
Yes, the infamous, I didn't mean to hit that button.
Me and my buttons, they keep changing my name or my order on the computer screen, and messes me up.
That's Bianca.
I don't know why it does
that.
That's what happens when I start saying exciting things. It's like popcorn.
Yeah, Gene censored you.
Then I knew, yeah. Sorry.
I don't think we missed anything. I think actually I was talking, but just all of a sudden I saw Bianca muted and I was like, wait a minute. So Gene has the same screen I do. Gene, this is the nice thing about being a producer is if something happens to me, she can be right there to kind of take over and run the show and has done so. Yeah, this makes a lot of sense, actually. Insurance, I never thought about that, but that makes a good amount of sense that your insurance.
Yeah, see,
you
Greg,
know,
here's
you,
the point.
You want to, what's that?
I oftentimes see things that really is completely out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And then we waste a lot of time trying to get it back in line. Let it go. Get rid of it.
Yeah.
It's just like
no.
car. An old car, your brakes go out. You fix them. Your transmission go out. You fix it. Your headlights go out. You fix it. Let it die. Get rid of it.
Yeah.
You're just wasting time and precious resources.
Well, and
get rid of
it. Sometimes when you have so many bureaucracies involved, it's actually less safe because people get overwhelmed and then it's like they don't follow anything because there's just so many mandates.
Oh, yeah. You can over-mandate people incredibly. You know, I think this actually makes a lot of sense. We need to start to – well, I want to have a budget committee here at Action Radio where we actually go over the federal budget and make recommendations on departments that don't need to exist, which would be a lot of them. And a lot of that's going to come from my video and article on a constitutional budget. You know, we need to get to the federal budget down to about $1.5 trillion. And we can do it. And a lot of things that would go would be entitlements, OSHA, Department of Education, you know, transportation, energy, the EPA, things like that. All those are state functions. Those are not federal functions.
What does the transportation department do? Because Buttigieg, I don't know how he got that job because he's as I can't say that. I was going to say he's as clueless as they come, but he's as clueless as the rest of the cabinet.
Yeah, but he's
cabinet
gay and he's married to a guy. It's he's a privileged class. He's gay and he's married to a guy. In Democrat world, that's like, you know, worth its weight in gold. So he's privileged, you know, because he's diverse, you know, and he took 3 months of maternity leave even though he's a guy. So during the worst supply crisis we've had since, I don't know, the Depression.
Right. And they say when there's a crisis, they have to be called back into office regardless what. And look at there. Obviously, his job isn't that important.
Well, that's a really good point. You know, in fact, I remember reading an article that talked about that nobody noticed he had gone. You know, and then he comes back. He's like, I'm back again. Well, that's nice. Where were you? Oh, maternity leave for what, 3 months? 3 months? What, did you give birth, pal? No. Was he breastfeeding? No. You know, so, yeah, it's nice to bond with your kid. I understand that. But, you know, it's just if you're transportation secretary, either don't take the job of transportation secretary or do your job and see your kid when you can.
And, you know, he got paid all those 3 months for sitting at home doing nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he probably makes a six-figure salary. I'm sure head of a department under Brandon, you know, makes a whole lot of money. Plus, it gets worse than that. They have limos to take him to and from work. All the heads of the departments, especially the cabinet secretaries, they don't do their own driving. You know, they're valuable. They're essential. So they get all these services. You'd be amazed what they get. They probably have private jets at their disposal too. You know, increasing the carbon footprint. But that's a good question. Well, if you have a minute, Gene, why don't you, if you have a chance to look up what the Department of Transportation actually does, let's find out what they do. Because, you know.
I maybe don't want to know because
that
will just get my blood boiling again. Cause,
yeah, we
kind of
tend to do that here.
It's such a joke, all the waste they have in government.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people that work in government, I always tell them, I wish you worked in healthcare for a day. Your whole idea of work would be so different.
Well, it'd be an idea of work.
Well, the department, he surely doesn't have control over shipping. and shipping that comes into the ports of the United States.
Yeah.
It doesn't need that.
Well, let me
tell
you about what's going on.
And
this has been reported on One American News, so this is pretty common knowledge. The problem with our supply chain is several. One, gasoline is really expensive. That goes back to Brandon, you know, of blocking our energy. And the fact that he's begging for oil from China and Russia and OPEC and begging for oil from everybody except, you know, creating a situation where American oil producers can produce it is kind of sick, you know, because he values the rest of the world a lot more than us. So there's your first problem, the cost of fuel of transporting things. The second problem is California, AB 5. It's a bill that gets rid of independent contractors, and that means independent truckers. Okay, so all those truckers that have invested $1 million in their truck or however much it costs over time to run one of those big rigs because they like working independently. You know, they contract for a job, they do the job, then they contract for another job. And if they're good at it, they're always going to be working or working as much as they want. They set their own schedules. They go where they want, you know, and it's a better life than say a regular company truck driver where you probably go to the same places at the same time and do some kind of really boring routine that drives you crazy. Anyway, point being that California took out the independent truckers. So now they have to be union workers or workers for a large company because they want the taxes. They want the employee taxes from the corporations that are hiring truckers. So no more independent truckers. That's a problem. The next problem they have is the California Air Resources Board, which is very much like a secret police force. They inspect everything. They make all cars, you know, go to the standard of a new car. You know, I had a 1987 Toyota Tercel wagon. You know, every other year I had to have its pollution standards be the same as a brand new 1987 Toyota Tercel wagon. Well, that's impossible. So we had to, you know, test it and make it comply and, you know, and then like 3 weeks later I get a tune-up and make it work again. You know, so it was what?
I've seen some issues floating around that if you bought a new car for the first 10 years of that new car life, you had to go back to the dealer to have it worked on and get parts for it. You know, it's devious things like that, that when you give these departments all this power, and next thing you know, you get in your car, and if you haven't had your vaccination, as indicated by a little chip floating around in you, your car won't start.
Exactly. Yeah. No, that's okay. that kind of stuff. That's medical. That's vaccination or health segregation. That's coming. So we need to fight that, obviously. People say that's extreme. Well, mandates are extreme, too, and yet here they are. But let me get a couple more problems with the California situation because the supply problems are in California. They're not in Florida. You notice – oh, Gene, let me get to you in just a second. You'll notice that there's no problem with the Florida supply chain. In fact, I think Florida and North Carolina and some of the other states and Texas are supplying most of the country right now. The ships are coming here, and you're seeing no issues at our ports. Why? Because we don't have the stupid rules that California has. All right. So Long Beach was the biggest port. I don't think they're going to recover from this for you know, a long time. I mean, like a couple of decades that these other ports are going to get built up and they're going to get taken over. But the other thing is that truckers in California have a pollution standard for particulates. Those are particles. Okay. So particulates come particularly from diesel fuel. Diesel fuel has more, you know, particulates than gasoline. It just does. But it doesn't mean they're more polluting. It just means they're particles, you know, things like that are coming out of the stack just because of the nature of diesel fuel. So they make truckers invest, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in their truck to fix that. They want to have truckers be working for a company rather than be independent. They have pollution standards for their cars where they're designed for your car to fail after 4 years. So there are very few cars in California over 4 years old because they can't meet the pollution standards, which really hurts, you know, lower income people because, you know, they have to find other ways to do it, right? But that's the situation. The reason we have a supply problem is California and Brandon. That's the problem. Gene.
Right. Well, yeah, and also with the truckers, they also have to be union and vaccinated.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know about that. And a lot of truckers don't want to do that.
Right. Yeah.
So there's one. Yeah.
Yeah, it says lots involved, but it says – the Secretary of Transportation oversees the U.S. Department of Transportation, which has over 55,000 employees, and then 13 agencies, including the Federal Aviation Administration, the Federal mm-hmm. Highway Administration, Federal Railroad Administration, and National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. So basically,
NHTSA.
That's a job mm-hmm. that can be eliminated because you know all these agencies within that agency has a top dog. And, yeah, that makes no sense. Yeah, so, yeah, that's a job that can be eliminated.
Well, let's rethink
this.
The FAA
comes under the Department of Transportation,
yeah,
right?
So, Gene mentioned the FAA and the railroads and the highways. What I would do is have those as separate agencies. Now, it is in the Constitution that roads, post roads, you know, that is one of the delegated powers in Article 1, Section 8. So one could argue that because mail travels over the highways, that the interstate highway system is, in fact, a federal responsibility. I believe it is. Okay, infrastructure. So you talk about certain things are federal. The fact that we have a federal aviation administration as opposed to a bunch of, well, I think states have their own too. I know California does. But having a federal airway system is a good thing. Okay, if you had different rules, different communications requirements, different certifications, you know, every time you cross the state line in the air concerning the speed of jets, that'd be impossible to work. So it makes sense to have that. Railroads, same thing. Those also come under interstate commerce. Interstate commerce is a federal responsibility. It was delegated to them in the Constitution in the Interstate Commerce Clause. So I would keep the independent, the Highway Department, the Railroad Department, and the FAA, but I would make them separate agencies. And the National Transportation Highway Safety Board, that's like OSHA. Yeah, you may not need them as much. Jane,
My question is though, and maybe I'm interpreting what you're saying wrong, but if you say okay the road should be federalized, then why when you go from one state to the other, it's a mess. I mean, some states have great roads and other states mm-hmm. have lousy roads. So
well,
if you have one person,
roads.
Like if he's mandating what needs mm-hmm. to be done, what do they have? Just a minimum standard, and some states go above that.
Well, no, they're state roads and they're federal roads. If you look at the interstate highway system, you know that shield, that blue shield with the red top? And it'll say I-10, like the one that runs through Florida, or I-95 up and down the East Coast, or 101 that goes up and down the West Coast. Those, I don't know if 101 is, but Route 1, those are federal roads. So they have a federal standard. They're maintained by federal highway funds.
Eisenhower administration.
Exactly. And the reason they did that was because of the Autobahns in Germany. They wanted to be able to get tanks from one end of the country to the other, you know, as quickly as possible if we had a national emergency or if we were invaded. The national highway system is actually part of our national security and our national defense. Not a lot of people know that. One of the things also you'll find is that there are many stretches of highway in the United States that are straight for 2 miles. And the reason the stretches of highway are straight for 2 miles, that's a runway. That's so that our jets, you know, 10,000 feet is pretty good distance for pretty much anything can land on 10,000 feet, right? So from your C-5 down to your F-16 can land on 2 miles of straight highway. That's why they do it. You know, so it is part of our infrastructure system. So the highways have to remain federal, as does the air transportation system. Another thing people don't know, Pianchi knows, I know, that the military air traffic control system and the civilian air traffic control system are completely integrated. When I was flying around the country, in small planes, you know, I would go from a military controller to a civilian controller constantly. I would be going to different ones. So it's absolutely, the Federal Aviation Administration absolutely has to remain federal. Now, we could still change powers, limit things, and stuff like that. And the same way that, so the highways and the railroads, in the same way too, railroads are interstate commerce. Railroads are a national thing that should have certain standards, I think. Pianchi?
Well, you know, here's another thing
here.
You got to think about too.
Uh-huh.
At some point in time in this country, we're gonna have the Jetson style aerial highway system. I mean, it's coming.
Yeah.
Not sure in the hell don't want Buttigieg issuing me a ticket for illegally parking or speeding. I really don't. So that has to be considered also.
Yeah.
You don't want to have too much control than the way you do in some areas now. So. That's coming.
Well, I should play a conversation that I had with Dr. Walter Williams, who has passed on now, but he was one of my first big interviews back at WBY. And one of the things we talked about was a constitutional budget. Looks like we got Claire on the line, which means that I don't think Jonathan's able to join us this morning, which is too bad. So, Claire, I'm going to bring you on a little bit early. But and, of course, you know I'm going to ask you to join our happy conversation here. But one of the things that I talked about with Dr. Walter Williams was a constitutional budget. And I asked him, I said, what are the things that the government, by the Constitution, is the federal government is legally entitled to do. And we talked about primarily national defense. You know, that's the biggest job. And then he says the highway system, the infrastructure, and then he sees the necessary offices that are delegated in the Constitution, the patents and trademarks, which comes under science and useful arts, the post office, that's actually in there. So they've been privatized. I don't know all the legal details on that. But he also mentioned the Supreme Court, Congress. I think I don't know if the Library of Congress is in there, but the certain offices that are delegated specifically areas in Article 1, Section 8 that are delegated to the federal government, they have to fund those things. Okay. And some, the Federal Trade Commission, I think, comes under, maybe I'm reaching there, but I'll have to look at the list anyway. But I said, well, how does that divide up and how much would a federal budget actually cost? And he said, well, you've got about $700 billion. This is at the time, this was like 3-4 years ago. You got about $700 billion for defense. You've got about another $100 billion for interstate highway, $100 to $200 billion for interstate highways and infrastructure, and you've got then you got everything else, And so you had basically you've got infrastructure, defense, defense, infrastructure, necessary offices, and that came to about $1 trillion at the time. Now it might be up to $1.2 trillion or something like that. But if you only funded the constitutional items in those areas, defense, infrastructure and necessary offices, you have a radically reduced federal government. And from that's when I started proposing my constitutional budget and looked at Article 1, Section 8 and did the video and did the article on exactly what the government should be funded. And I took the clauses of Article 1, Section 8 and I matched them up with the current departments. Oh, the Bureau of Indian Affairs was in there too. So things like that. But that's how it really breaks down. And so when you look at it, most of what the federal government should be doing is defense and then infrastructure and then the necessary offices. And that's it. That's all they get. But I would put the FAA and the railroads and the highways under as separate agencies under the federal government because they're there because of interstate commerce and they're there because of infrastructure of post roads and I'll get Article 1, Section 8 and I'll bring CLEAR in. Does that make sense, Pianchi?
Yeah, it does. And the FAA in the United States is one of the most efficient and safest there is. People don't know that anything that you have that's designed to fly, that's one inch off the ground, you are in FAA-controlled airspace. That's the way the rules are. And they are good rules. So, no, I wouldn't want to see the FAA under direct control and operation of Bullish. Heck no.
Yeah. Well, there's another thing, too, is that there was a move back several years ago under Clinton to privatize the air traffic control system so that private pilots would have to pay, for permission to take off and land. And we all screamed and yelled, said, no, you need the infrastructure. It's in the Constitution. It's part of what makes our country work. And nobody would fly. I mean, you'd kill general aviation and you'd kill your future airline pilots and airlines if you made pilots pay for it. And some European countries do this. I think France does this, which makes it prohibitively expensive to fly there. I'm going to go over
Article
1,
already
real quickly. That's another problem. We'll talk about that too. In fact, I have a General Aviation Revitalization Act. It's one of our many things here at Action Radio. So let me just go over this, and I got Claire's line live, so feel free to drop in. That's Claire Lopez, who does our intelligence report, foreign policy, and everything else. Oh, we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. But let me just get this here. So this is what Congress is legally allowed to fund. Article 1, Section 8. The Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, excises, to pay the debts, and provide for the common defense and the general welfare of the United States. General welfare means that all laws apply equally. It's not a welfare department, okay, just to get that straight. But all duties, imposts, and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States. So here's what they can do. And the first one I disagree with, which is to borrow money on the credit of the United States. I think we need to remove the power of Congress to borrow money because obviously they can't handle it. Second, to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states and with the Indian tribes. That's where your FAA transportation, FAA highways and railroads come in. To establish uniform rule of naturalization and uniform laws on the subject of bankruptcies. To coin money, regulate the value thereof in a foreign coin. To provide for the punishment of counterfeiting the securities and coin of the United States. To establish post offices and post roads. So the post office is actually constitutional. It's kind of interesting. To promote the progress of science and the useful arts by securing for limited times to authors and inventors the exclusive right. That would be patents and trademarks. To constitute tribunals inferior to the Supreme Court, to define and punish piracies and felonies, to declare war, grant letters of marque, I'm skipping over some stuff, to raise and support armies and the Navy, to make rules governing, et cetera, calling forth the militia, and we've got more militia stuff here, and they've got to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over the District of Columbia and to make laws which are necessary and proper. That's basically it. That's how it works. Okay, Bianchi's back, which is good. Jean, you're sort of walking into the – I mean, excuse me, Jean, Claire. You're kind of walking into the middle of our constitutional discussion here. But from what you heard so far, as we're trying to figure out what's constitutional, what isn't, what do you think so far? And then we can get into some of the other major hassles that you're more familiar with.
Yeah, well, good morning, everybody. You know, I've only been listening a couple minutes here. And I think you just read from the Constitution, Greg. End of story. That you just read what's, you know, legally mandated under our Constitution. End of story.
Yeah. So we're looking at ways. In fact, I want to form a budget committee here at Action Radio where we actually put out a federal budget of our own, you know, using Article 1, Section 8. I've done it myself, but I want to do it more detailed. I want to get the latest fiscal year figures. So that's one of the many projects I want to get going here. Okay, so just
I mean, one
to,
of the one of the problems, of course, is once bureaucracy is created, unlike the Internet, it never goes away. You cannot abolish bureaucracy once it's been created. It just doesn't happen.
Let me ask you a far-reaching question here, because you brought up something that I want to work on. And one of the bills I wrote is called the Department of Innovation. I basically wrote it for Newt Gingrich, hoping he'll, you know, discover the show here and talk to us someday. But one of the things I talked about is coming up with a new model for government beyond bureaucracy. If you look at the governments through history, they've always had bureaucracies, and it's always been horrible. But they're always there. But I don't know how else to have the laws and regulations of a government enforced. But one of the things I want to talk about is to try and find a way to do that. So if you want to think about this and you know, puzzle it through and maybe, you know, at a future week do it, because you're someone I want to have on the panel of our brainstorm panel, is to look at government and find a way to govern without these little kingdoms, these little fiefdoms that form, where they have more power than members of Congress. They don't respect oversight. You've got OSHA now thinking they can enforce vaccine mandates, you know, when they do occupational safety and health. And we discussed earlier that we don't even need them. If anything, it should be a state function coming near the police powers. But there's nothing in the Constitution that has work regulations, you know, in the federal government. But it'd be interesting, with your knowledge, we should get Bianchi in this too, but if you look through the governments, even through ancient history, was there a better model for the administration of laws than to have bureaucracies, and who had it? How would we go about
we,
like that?
We can wish, we can dream. I don't know what was in your coffee this morning, but not happening.
Okay, well, that's the You see, you got to understand that I'm the eternal optimist. I'm going to take it on anyway, just because that's a challenge that I find fascinating, to come up with a different model of government beyond bureaucracy. Okay.
Well, absolute monarchy might serve.
No, I don't want to make it worse. I'm trying to make it better, Claire.
Well, there is no better. It doesn't exist.
There has to be something better than bureaucracies. There has to be. No, nothing
coffee.
Through history. No, nothing comes to mind. Okay. All right.
Well, no.
No, too bad. Well, let's go for the easy one first, oil. You know, President Brandon is going around the world doing everything he can. I think he went to Russia, China. I want to focus on China particularly, OPEC. He's begging everybody else for oil when we had, under Trump, energy independence. Take all the time you want. Tell me what the hell's going on.
It's the most hypocritical thing I've ever seen, I think. But a lot of competitors, but recently, from this administration, the Biden administration. I mean, he knows perfectly well he killed oil production, energy production in this country. He knows that. The junta that's actually running the government knows that. It's unbelievably hypocritical to be running around the world, disingenuous, doesn't even begin to cover it. Yes, we had energy independence under President Trump, and when the Biden administration, the junta came in, they deliberately destroyed that. I think most Americans know that.
So knowing that they deliberately destroyed it, that they want to get us off, you know, fossil fuels. I don't even like that term, fossil fuels. I use that kind of sarcastically because, you know, the Earth, I'm sure, makes oil like it makes everything else. It doesn't make sense to me that one particular mineral comes from, you know, from dinosaurs. It Buying that for a second, or, you know, mass pools of algae or whatever. Anyway, because oil fields tend to regenerate after a few years, which is kind of interesting. But the point is that we have oil, we have coal, we have uranium, except for the 20% that Hillary gave away. We've got a lot of stuff here. We were independent
a year and a half ago.
We were independent a year and a half ago. You know, and so these folks, if they want to dismantle energy, which they have done, they've gotten rid of the Keystone Pipeline, they've funded or they've allowed for the Russian, you know, pipeline into Germany. So thanks, Germany. Appreciate that. But they're stopping our pipelines, advancing other pipelines around the world. So they're not against energy. They're against us having energy. They're against American producers. Why, if they, you know, so the hypocrisy, it goes to the extent that that they're saying that energy is bad, carbon is bad, as they fly off to, you know, Glasgow and everything else. But they really seem to be stopping American energy, now that I think about it, because if energy is bad, they wouldn't be begging for it from other places, because their oil is going to have the same carbon effect as our oil. But that's going to have more effect
because
we've got better oil.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Explain
or worse.
That.
I mean, they're not as environmentally conscious even than America is. So you're trading off environmentally conscious energy production for that which is not. They know exactly what they're doing. I mean, this is about the destruction of America. They know perfectly well that's what they're doing. And I think Americans increasingly know it too. There's going to be a course correction.
Well, I think it's already happening. They've got the lowest poll ratings in history. You know, and descending fast. But, you know, as I say, I don't expect legal operations from an illegal administration. You know, so you talk about the junta. Do you have any insight into who's behind this? You know, it's sort of like my weekly favorite question. Do we have anybody, do we know, you know, who's, you know, how much of Obama, Susan Rice, Valerie Jarrett, Kamala Harris behind the scenes? You know, is she as incompetent as she looks? You know, any other insights into who's running the show?
We simply don't know. I mean, anybody who talks about it is mere speculation. I mean, we certainly know that the chief of staff, Ron Klain, is certainly up there. Everything else basically is speculation. The truth is we do not know. I mean, we can speculate till the cows come home, but we do not know.
Well, wait a minute. If we can, if they can spy on the Trump campaign, you know, don't we have some people in government that can spy on them and find out? I mean, I'm just, you know me.
I mean, there have been articles published. Is it National Pulse? I don't remember which outlet, but not that long ago, some weeks maybe, published a list of those. And a lot of the names are not names that anybody would necessarily recognize right off. They're deep state bureaucrat names. That's who it is. It's not the usual suspects that everybody talks about, although they may be in the mix somewhat. But the names of those who are really running things are deep state bureaucrats. That's who they are.
If you know some of those people, like I'm not familiar with Ron Klain. He's chief of staff.
To Biden.
But I don't see him. That's not a face that I recognize.
The place.
Okay,
oh, yeah.
So all right, so
yeah,
that's for me to look at. Any other names you can think of? Anybody else I should be taking a look at? Because you never know what we'll find, what will turn up, old articles, things like that, old bio information.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know. I simply don't know. I remember this list that was generated by an outlet, and I can't remember which one, some weeks ago. And honestly, there were some lawyers on there, there were some bureaucrats on there, and I didn't recognize most of the names. But that's who's running it.
See, that would make sense to me, because otherwise these people, you know, people that like being in the news, like Adam Schiff, they can't help it. They'll run to whatever camera they can find. Chuck Schumer, you know, don't get between Chuck Schumer and a camera. This is like the Washington, you know, thing. And so, but the people, the most dangerous people are the ones that don't want the attention, that want the power without the attention. And so I'm going to take a look and see if I can find some of those folks. Jonathan's on the line now too. So I want to find out all about Steve Bannon and stuff next time. But I want to make Jonathan's line live too. But I want to keep going this oil thing for a little bit, because it's amazing how fast we went to a situation where these folks are begging for oil. So again, they're not against energy. And this goes to the supply chain. This goes to the cost of fuel. This goes to diesel. This goes to California and their ridiculous trucking regulations, both for independent contractors and their insane pollution standards and everything else like that. So strategically, where does this put us in the world in terms of what we need to do to get oil from foreign sources like OPEC, like Russia and China? What kind of hold are they going to have over us now, Claire?
We're a laughing stock. I mean, they're all laughing at us. We're self-destructing, and they love it. I mean, you know, this will turn around. The American people will course correct. But for the time being, the entire rest of the world is not just laughing at us, but taking advantage of us in every way it possibly can, as fast as it can, until the course correction kicks in.
So what are they doing? Just raising the price of oil?
You know, another thing, Greg.
Monday? Pinky, go ahead. Jackie, go ahead, then I'll ask my question.
You know, another thing, too. Look at the excise tax that they have on gasoline and diesel. Like in Pennsylvania, it's up to like, 50, 60 cents a gallon? Where are they going to recover that tax from?
Well, if people are driving less, here's something interesting, too. This California did this. They keep raising the gas tax. They promoted conservation so people conserved. They bought smaller cars. They bought hybrids. They run around their Priuses. And then the state loses money because people are buying less gasoline, so their sales taxes and various gas taxes are down, so they end up raising the taxes. You know, so they still want their guaranteed income, even though they want conservation. So they're trying to have it both ways. Claire,
the market gets a say in all this, and they don't really understand what makes the market work, do they?
No. No, they understand the consequences. You can't, in cause and effect, they think that raising taxes will increase revenue, and actually lowering taxes does because it generates more economic activity. And they can't make that lead to that. Anyway, let's get Jonathan on because we haven't heard from him. Jonathan, sorry you got to join us late, but we're going to pick up next week. I'm going to do a big Steve Bannon thing and stuff like that. So how are you doing today, sir?
Yeah, I apologize. I woke up and started writing a legal pleading, and it just completely couldn't. I'm actually writing a thing in the January 6th cases, so it kind of got on my mind. But the to honor Claire's time, I wanted to, you know, I remember I helped work on a small energy company in Latvia a while ago, and one of the big risk factors was that Eastern Europe or the Baltics is dependent upon Russia's natural gas reserves. And in the same way, you know, we're seeing how, you know, the oil is, maybe it's stating the obvious, but it's clear if you just comment on how first it's filling the coffers of Russia to have oil high. And it's just it's not a new, it's not like someone's just making this up right now that Europe being dependent upon Russia's petroleum, not as well as its natural gas.
Yeah, that's a great question.
It is a serious issue. Don't you think?
Claire?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Yes. I mean, geographically speaking, it's a natural partnership. It's only the geopolitics of it all that makes it problematic. And the fact of the matter is that Europe simply does not have the energy resources aside from, you know, the North Sea and some other things, but it doesn't have the resources that Siberia does. It's just economically, geographically, it makes sense. But, of course, Putin and Moscow take full advantage of that. To squeeze the Europeans whenever they don't like something that's going on. And so it's a real conundrum.
Well, isn't France like 50, 60, or maybe even 70% nuclear-powered for the electricity? I mean, they have a huge nuclear industry.
Sure, France is one of, 28 members of the EU? 27, 28?
So compared to, say, Germany, I don't know if you know, and I just thought of this just now, but how dependent are these countries? So is France more independent, you know, energy-wise, and they don't have to depend on Russian oil or natural gas? They can use their nuclear power more?
True, yes. But those further to the east, you know, closer to Russia and not close to the North Sea or any other source of other energy, and that they don't have a good infrastructure of nuclear power, they're dependent on Russian natural gas.
Interesting. Did Russia build nuclear plants, you know, probably substandard like Chernobyl kind of thing without containment? Did they build nuclear plants in the former communist countries of Eastern Europe?
There are some, but it's nowhere near the production capacity of the natural resources out of Urals and Siberia, oil and natural gas. I mean, they're awash in the stuff.
Yeah, Interesting. Do you know why Europe hasn't followed the French model, given the fact they don't have as much energy and gone for more of a nuclear position on energy?
I'm not sure. A lot of, civic opposition, green people, that sort of nonsense.
I was waiting for that too, yeah. Okay, so another question I had, and if any, we've got, I think Pianki's left us, but, and Jonathan, feel free to and Jean, jump in with questions here too. Pipelines, if I remember, and we now have listeners in Azerbaijan, which I find really interesting, but there are pipelines in Afghanistan, Azerbaijan, I think in that region of the world. Have we, when Biden surrendered to the Taliban, did we lose any either control or influence over those pipelines and where that oil comes from or goes? Do you know about that, Claire?
Afghanistan has pipelines?
I'm not sure. Well, I know there are pipelines in that area.
Not that I know of.
They don't have an oil pipeline? Okay, so that's wrong then. All right, I was just curious. But I know
somewhere around there in the Caucasus, yes, they do, of course. But Afghanistan, not so much.
So we didn't lose anything there. Well, that's good. Okay. Does Gene or Jonathan, do you have a question? Any more questions on oil? Then I want to get to the great video instructional,
I don't.
Classroom that was given to Brandon. Jonathan?
Well, the only thing I could add to that is I remember hearing that not only are the French using nuclear, but I read that they're doing it in a much more extensive way. They get like 5 to 10 times as much energy out of the uranium, I guess, by making plutonium with breeder reactors or something. And they're kind of laughing at how stupid the United States is and the way we don't do it. We don't do it. I mean, they're all. And my point is, they're all in the French, and we're. I once again let, I guess early versions of being woke instead of being smart in our attitudes.
Well, the French have they did a bunch of nuclear testing in the South Pacific. I remember when those things were going on. They've been much more involved in nuclear, I think, weapons and nuclear research and nuclear energy. I think they're pretty advanced in terms of nuclear waste. I think they have better ways of disposing of the waste than a lot of other countries do. So it looks like and it's something we were doing here until, as Claire says, the Greenies, basically took over and killed our nuclear industry. In fact, California is thinking of getting rid of their, they have 20% of their nuclear power from like 2 plants. They're thinking of getting rid of one of them, which would make it, they would kill 10% of their electric power by getting rid of one old nuclear plant. But anyway, nuclear politics, is that, of course, Iran. And then we can bring them into this conversation too, because they are doing both, or they're advancing nuclear power and nuclear weapons, and they all kind of sort of work together. So, Claire, are we screwing up everywhere?
Yeah, but the nuclear power that Iran is generating is the kind that builds bombs. It's not really for nuclear production for electrical supply. They too, Iran also has lots and lots of oil and natural gas, but their nuclear capabilities going into a deliverable weapons capability. That's where that's going.
Okay, what's happening with Afghanistan now? Where do we stand on the surrender? We still got people there. Is anybody looking to do anything? Is it off the radar? What's the Taliban up to that you can see?
Well, the place is descending into chaos, and it really looks a lot like a repeat of the 1990s, the time after the end of the 1980s Afghan war against the Soviets and the Red Army. Then during the 1990s is when the warlords from before, the Mujahideen warlords, fell to fighting one another. And of course, that's when the Taliban arose. There was no Taliban in the 1980s. Or Al-Qaeda either. Both of them arose in the 1990s. Excuse me, and the Taliban arose as a response to the chaos of the warlords, the destruction they were wreaking upon Afghan cities. And the Taliban, of course, created by the Pakistani Intelligence Service, the ISI, drawn from, recruited from the madrasas among the Pashtun population on both sides of the Afghan-Pakistan border. Talib, singular, means student. Taliban, plural, means students. And that's what the ISI used as its cannon fodder to create the Taliban, and they've, you know, backed, armed, funded, and supported them ever since to this day.
Hmm.
And but what I'm seeing is a repeat of the chaos where the warlords of the different ethnic groups. I think I've talked about this on this show before. that Afghanistan is not really a country; it's a hodgepodge collection of various warring ethnic groups and tribes. You've got the Tajiks, you've got the Uzbeks, you've got the Pashtun, and you've got the Hazara, who are the Shiites. And even though Taliban forces have now taken control of just about most of the country, as well, of course, the capital, Kabul, they really don't have complete control over everything in all of those provinces. And the civil wars have begun. And the new player, of course, there now is the Islamic State, Islamic State Khorasan, it's called, which was sent over with fighters and funding 5-6 years ago from the Middle East to get a foothold. And now the Islamic State Khorasan has a foothold in just about all of Afghanistan, maybe not every province, but getting there. And a big deal is always made of rivalries between the Islamic State and Taliban, but don't pay attention to that, because that's peanuts. Leadership always squabbles and fights over funding and you know, financing sources and opium trade and whatever else have you. But the fact is that they all follow the same decree. It is the jihad obligation of Islam that is incumbent upon every single Muslim on the face of the earth. And they all follow these guys. The Taliban and the Islamic State, of course, are the most devout, faithful, and practicing of all Muslims anywhere on earth. And so they follow the obligation to jihad, and that's what they're doing. But in the meantime, it's the Afghan people who are suffering. And, yeah, so, I mean, I see the country becoming a magnet again for jihad.
Mm-hmm.
Fighters are pouring in from all over the world to join because it's an emirate. It's a functioning kind of sort of emirate, obeying the command to jihad, and jihadis the world over want to be part of it. And that spells risk and danger for all of Afghanistan's neighbors and us too. Obviously us, because they're going to come for us. Maybe already have, as I've said this before too, the advanced team for the next 9/11 very well could already be on American soil.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. We don't have a border anymore. You know,
it's
so
not
these,
about
these...
even the border. It's about the flights, the chartered flights with tens of thousands of Afghans unvetted coming over from the battlefield straight to a town near you.
Do you know anything more about that as far as how like pre-arrangements with our own government? Because there's no accident all those people were there at the airport. It's no accident that Bagram was given up so we couldn't have a secure American withdrawal during the surrender. So do you know how all those folks were there? Is there any evidence that this is more organized than we thought? No, I think it's organized, and I just don't have the evidence. I can't point to anybody.
No,
I
don't see evidence for that either. I see massive incompetence, massive bungling, ill will to be sure. I mean, you know, a perfect willingness to leave Americans behind. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. State Department, Department of Defense, White House. But you know, all of this coordinated and planned. No, I mean, think who is in these top appointed offices right now. The most incompetent people that could possibly be found within the entire federal bureaucracy and outside.
Yep.
That's who was brought in to occupy these positions.
See, that's
they,
in other
they
words,
were deliberately chosen because they were incompetent.
Yeah, planned incompetence. It's something. It's a concept we're not quite familiar with. We like to think of the people as they rise to you know, power, you're actually getting the better people. What you're actually getting are the worst. And I'm listening to, I heard Mayorkas testifying, you know, before Congress. The man's a complete idiot. You know, he should be running a 7-Eleven somewhere. Like, not that, you know, 7-Elevens are bad, but, you know.
You know, at the contrast between our top leadership and the top leadership of someplace like, oh, let's say China.
Yeah.
Where every
well, let's
single
go there.
Person at the top levels, Communist Party, Central Committee of the Communist Party, to be sure, you know, IQs 150 above, and or you don't even get anywhere near those places. And then compare that to how our people are pushed up to the top levels.
Yeah, it's not like we don't have bright Americans. We do, but they're not in the places where they should be. So
they
let's talk
get
about
to those positions. No.
Well, we have obviously an inferior selection process, which brings us back to our bureaucracy reform, which I still want to talk to you about in more detail as I sort of get some kind of plan together. But this video virtual meeting, do you have some details on what actually transpired, what was said, what are the messages, the instructions to Brandon going forward that we didn't hear about in the news?
Well, this was a virtual internet, meeting held between President Joe Biden and the leader of the Chinese Communist Party, Xi Jinping, and took place a couple of nights ago. I believe it was Tuesday night, right, of this
mm-hmm.
week.
Yeah.
And to all accounts, it lasted around 3.5 hours. There were very low expectations for any positive or substantive conversation or outcome from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, the meeting apparently lived up to those expectations.
lived up to those expectations, yeah.
Yeah, there was discussion about, from the Biden side, discussion about, how can we work together on things like climate change? And Xi Jinping says, oh, yeah, okay, sure. I didn't show up at Glasgow at the climate change meeting, but yeah, we can work out on that, and chit chat like that. But by the by, Biden says something about our commitment to Taiwan.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to focus on.
Well, he
yeah.
didn't make a commitment per se. He said our policy on Taiwan, the policy of two Chinas, and not two Chinas, two governments, I guess. One
mm-hmm.
China policy, two governments, remains. And she comes back with, don't play with fire. I mean, just throwing down the gauntlet, putting the American administration on a warning, that they're don't mess with Taiwan. And I think the message was probably received. It's the status quo on Taiwan that was going to go on probably for a long time. That's the best outcome any of us can hope for. Keep the status quo. Don't tip the balance. The meeting was really, I don't know what they talked about for 3.5 hours. Maybe their grandchildren. I don't know.
Well, I was amazed it was public. It was public, right? I mean, you can actually view this thing or no?
No, there were. I wasn't watching, so I'm not quite sure. But there were partial transcripts from some of it. Yeah, I don't know that the entire thing was broadcast. No.
So why would they even do this? What's in it for us, if anything?
Nothing. I mean, why would this administration do anything that's in it for America?
Well, that's true. Because it seems to me, I joke about this being, Biden's instruction as he's, the Chinese ambassador to the insurrection, but that's what it seems to me. It's just because the way that he's talked to, you never see this in Trump. Trump, first of all, wouldn't have a meeting like this, but secondly, he wouldn't tolerate for a second being talked to by Xi Jinping in this way. Jonathan, I want to get you in because we haven't heard from you for a bit. But do you have anything going on in Washington, any mumbles, grumbles, or anything from folks, in the federal government about this kind of kowtowing to China, especially in a video, which it was like a virtual learning session for Biden to get his instructions for what to do next. That's what it looked like to me. Jonathan, you got a comment on this? You don't have to. I just want to make sure I get everybody included in our discussions today.
Yeah, well, there is a lot of consternation about it, I don't know that I can add much myself, except, there are even rumors going on around about replacing the vice president.
Let's talk about that. What's going on with that?
The House may have to do confirmation hearings, which the House only deals with confirming a new vice president, which could be if Kamala steps up and Biden, steps out or whatever. But it's a big topic being discussed everywhere, and But I think I guess they could talk about Hunter Biden's investments for 3 hours. There's something else. So that's all I add on that.
Well, let's go for that. I think we kind of covered the China video thing. It was a total waste, and I still believe it's an instructional video for
I do remember a question that maybe I should ask now before we move on.
Yeah, go ahead.
Is Claire, do you think that these people in our leadership and the State Department has not really been a shining example even before the Biden administration, that is it because they're – do you think it's – and I'm asking you to be a psychoanalyst – but do you think it's because they're blinded by their woke, view of the world even before the term woke was invented, or are they really just unqualified?
I mean, all of the above. But let's—I mean, we really have to go backwards. I think many decades to when, excuse me again, the Frankfurt School and the forces of Marxism in a very organized way entered our academic system. And it's been decades now of indoctrination in our public school system, at least, if not other schools too, private and charter and so forth. So the graduates of these educational systems who move on into, well, academia themselves, into media, and certainly into government, they come at all of that with that indoctrination, with the worldview, the Weltanschauung, that America is a force for evil in the world, and that their most moral obligation that they can possibly live up to is to take America down, to reduce us to the level of just one of 194 countries in the world, a globalist vision. This is how they come to office, whatever level it is, and then unfortunately many rise in office to higher levels. They have a Weltanschauung that America is bad. They will do everything in their power to diminish America's power and influence in the world. If you think that's your moral obligation, that is your ethical foundation in life, this is what you do.
Good question. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Go ahead. Well, I mean, in a different tack, I was going to take, unless you want to keep.
Oh no,
I
always have questions. Don't mind me. You know, I think talked about this before. It's pretty well covered. But obviously, these people can't be trusted. Their sole goal in life is to destroy our country, whereas China's sole goal is to advance, and take over the world. It's fascinating that those two ideologies met on a video conference. and expecting a good result from that is irrational. Anyway, Jonathan, go ahead. Do you have a question?
Well, we also have, and I think I've heard complaints since the 80s about the State Department being worthless. Mm-hmm. But another thing that occurs to me from the videotape from Zing is not a traditional cultural value, but at least among these people, the cultural value that if I'm self-deprecating, it will be disarming and endearing, and the other side will respond in kind. So Biden, except when he's yelling at Republicans, has aw shucks, maybe it's our fault or whatever. And we tend to assume that our enemies are going to respond the same way. And I don't know if you have any.
Yeah, I mean, this is all part of the same Marxist agenda going, back to what I've talked about many times, the W. Cleon Skousen book, The Naked Communist, and chapter 13 of that, The 45 Goals of Communism Today. It's not spelled out specifically this way, but the demasculinization of America, the wimping out of America. Please pass the marshmallows and let's have another rousing chorus of kumbaya around the campfire and everybody else will just join us because get me my teddy bear. This is what's happened to America. The spirit of the pioneers, the frontier, the industrial titans, everything else, the space exploration, all of these, energetic and you know, the kinds of expectations and inspiration, it's all gone. It's all been wimped down to give me a you know, a teddy bear in my blankie in a safe space. This is America today, demasculinization, and China is in completely the opposite direction. Guess who's going to take over the world?
Yeah, it's funny you should say that. Josh Hawley, senator, has been speaking about masculinity of late. I don't know whether it's an organization or a group or what he's trying to do. I agree with him, absolutely. And we have an Action Radio man page, you know, just for that reason, to talk about, you know, talk about a lot of these issues of, you know, toxic masculinity and all this other crap that's going on out there. But there are still guys, you know, and this is why Trump is such a shining example of, a regular American guy, pioneer spirit, adventure. I think we have a lot of that here at Action Radio. We're creating something completely new here too. And no one's going to tell me I can't. I don't believe in that. It doesn't exist. And so I think that it's out there, but it's being bred out in the schools. It's being bred out everywhere. But in terms of masculinity as a national security issue, it really is a huge one. For what you're saying, Claire, about this.
Oh, I think so, very much so.
Okay.
And I don't mean, you know, masculinity in the sense of, you know, ever aggressive and domineering. That's not what I mean. I mean,
the
yeah. kinds of personality that women, certainly of the pioneer days, had too,
mm-hmm.
which
yeah.
is that spirit of adventurism, the spirit of can-do, the spirit of moving forward, the spirit of being proud of being an American. That's what I'm really talking about. Let's get
mm-hmm.
this done. That was why Trump, coming out of the business world, I think, has been so successful, because his whole mentality is, how do we solve the problem? Not,
mm-hmm.
give me my blankie. I've been offended. No,
yeah.
It's how do we solve the problem? Let's do it. And if you don't do it, you're fired. You know, that's what I mean by this spirit. And I don't mean to confine it just, you know, to the male of the species. But it's that can-do spirit, you know, both men and women
that's
being bred out of America.
Women are being rewarded for being independent and pioneering and starting businesses and being assertive and being aggressive and taking on challenges and things like that.
Well, unless they're conservative.
Oh, well, that's true, too, yeah. But you look at, you know, whenever the media reports the first woman to do something, you know, no one's ever reported the first white male to create Action Radio, you know, even though white Action Radio was created by a white male, you know, me. So it's,
well, I mean, or that the state of my state of Virginia just elected the first black immigrant African-American lieutenant governor to that position in the
veteran.
History of the state.
Yeah, veteran,
and
too.
Veteran, Marine Corps, hoorah.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
which is huge.
So that doesn't count either, you see, because she's conservative.
Yeah.
I'm talking
yeah.
about Winsome Sears, of course.
Oh, I know. She's wonderful. I want to learn more about her. And, you know, we might even get her on the show. I want to talk to everybody. I'm terrible. But the spirit is there, but it's being crushed. It's being crushed in the schools. It's being crushed in a lot of places. And it's certainly being crushed, you know, in the Brandon insurrection. I've got a kind of crazy idea. We've got about 12 minutes left here. And I was thinking about Taiwan. I said, how can we help Taiwan? How can we aid Taiwan? What can we do that would be innovative, different, a little unusual, and might freak out China? And I was thinking of Switzerland, and I talked about this a little bit earlier in the show. Everybody thinks of the Swiss as neutral in World War II. Well, they weren't. The reason the Nazis didn't invade Switzerland, from everything I've read, is because every Swiss family has a gun. I mean, shooting is like a national sport. Target shooting is like a national obsession. And so the Swiss, and to this day, as far as I know, most Swiss families have either a semi-automatic or fully automatic rifle of some kind, and they're all trained. Everybody goes to the military. So the Swiss are armed to the teeth, you know, in terms of civil defense, and they practice it. I think they have regular, you know, like National Guard weekends or months or things like that. So Germany, as far as I understand, took a look at Switzerland as a place to invade or conquer. Yes, they've got mountains. You can't roll through Switzerland like you can roll over Poland. It's a totally different thing. But you look at the people too, you know, a heavily armed population is a huge deterrent. So when I thought about that, I thought about Taiwan, and I was thinking, if we could get 500,000 AR-15s into the Taiwanese population, I don't think, you know, Brandon's not going to aid Taiwan. They're not going to get the military support. I wish they would from other countries, but we're talking, you know, a long-term problem, and we need a short-term solution. So this is kind of crazy on my part, but if we could get anywhere from 500,000 to 2 million AR-15s into Taiwan, one way or another, you know, it might present such a deterrent force that, yes, China could crush Taiwan's defenses, but they can never hold the country because there's so many guns there.
But what makes you think the Taiwanese want guns or would ever want to learn how to use them? What gives us that idea?
Well, this is just my idea. I need to work through the details. So that's my question. Do they have a gun-owning population? Do they believe in civil defense? You know, would they? Do they have a lot of people who have been through the military?
No. The Taiwanese have a very well-trained military. The United States Armed Forces have been there training them now for quite some time. That just came out fairly recently in the media.
Mm-hmm.
But what is keeping Beijing, what is deterring Beijing from invading Taiwan is, yes, it's multi-layered defense, missiles and other defenses, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a very delicate balancing game of maintaining a balance right now, the status quo. That is the aim. That's the goal, the status quo. That is that neither the Taiwanese nor we nor Japan or other Quad members openly declares Taiwan an independent country. We don't do that. And the Chinese, which really don't want a hot fighting war against the Taiwanese defenses, refrain from an all-out invasion. It's a very delicate balancing game. There are all kinds of political and business ties between the two. I don't think people realize how close the two are in terms of commerce, of politics, and so many other things.
That's a good thing to point out.
The objective right now is to make an all-out military assault against Taiwan undesirable, undigestible, keep the status quo, don't upset the balance, and let it go on as it will. Now, here's one thing that ought to be considered. The Taiwanese might not be there in a couple more generations because they've got about the lowest birth rate on the face of the earth. They're not having
children. Why is that? They didn't have a one-child policy like China did. Why?
No, they did not, but they're not having children. They're simply not having children. Their population is declining and will continue to decline in decades to come. At a certain point, it becomes unrecoverable.
Has China figured, I'm sure they figured that in their calculation, they don't have to take over Taiwan. They can just wait until the population
China's
declines.
China's population
20, 30
growth
years?
Is going off a cliff, too, of course. So,
right. Yeah, remember that.
Which one is going to decline faster? Of course,
but it's still
China
bigger.
Mainland has many, many, many hundreds of millions more people. It's
right.
a longer decline for them.
So what would deter China? Is Taiwan reaching out to other nations? Because Brandon's not going to help them. Are they looking to more of the Quad countries or other countries?
The Biden administration already is helping Taiwan. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
All right.
We
have
our military there training their military.
Mm-hmm.
We've also sent warships, aircraft carriers, and other countries have too. The British, I think the Canadians, through the Straits of Taiwan. So these are deterrent measures. These are deterrent demonstrations, but nobody really wants a hot, you know, invasion war with Taiwan.
So this is like a Cold War kind of game where Russian bombers would fly over and we'd have fighters escort them and they go back and forth and they all knew each other and so it's a dangerous game, but it is, like you say, status quo. That's interesting.
Yeah, it is avoiding the terrible casualties, human cost that would come with an all-out invasion. Nobody wants that.
So even China doesn't want that then? It's not
no,
worth
they
taking
do not.
Taiwan
because
at
they would
the expense?
Take, well, they would take a lot of losses as well, and who knows who would get involved after statements coming out of the senior leadership of, for example, the Japanese foreign ministry.
What
no,
they
don't want that either. Besides which, the commercial and business ties are so lucrative, nobody wants to mess that up.
So what's the
Huawei.
Point of the propaganda then? What's the point of getting after the United States so much for, you know, saying, I guess
it's
they
games.
Didn't say independent Taiwan. Okay.
It's games.
Okay.
Lots and lots of games being played.
So what's in it for China? And then what's in it for us? Yeah, let me hold that question.
Well,
Jonathan,
what's in it for China, for example, is control of over 90% of the world's production of semiconductor chips.
Okay, that's huge.
And that business between China and Taiwan is alive and well.
Okay. Is there anything in it for us in this game? What's in it for us in this game? Say, what was in it during the Trump administration? How was Trump playing the game?
Well, that had to do with our own economy and rebalancing a very lopsided, for example, trade imbalance and cracking down on the cheating, the intellectual property theft, the espionage going on at Chinese consulates around the country, our country.
Yeah, Trump got billions in penalties.
The infiltration of Chinese PLA undercover into our public health system, all that. That Trump got after that. The current Biden administration, not so much.
Yeah, I want to talk about public health in a minute, but I think Jonathan has a question. I want to check with Gene, too. Jonathan?
Well,
we're coming.
None of these questions, you know, are necessarily quick answers. Each one of them could be a seminar.
Well, that's what we do here.
But the you sort of answered this. Well, I mean, more than sort of. You've pretty much answered this already, but I'm just going to ask. Some countries, at least alleged in the history of humanity, would view their overpopulation as an opportunity to go to war, and if a bunch of people die, you know, all the better. But you seem to think China doesn't take that view. Is that fair to say?
I think with regard to Taiwan, it's certainly fair to say. Now, certainly China has, I don't know what it is, 20, 30, 40 million what they call bear branches, the young men who will never, ever find a wife. That's a dangerous, you know, population imbalance to have. But no, I don't think they want a hot shooting war against Taiwan or whomever else might, as I said before, be pulled in to that, to such an eventuality. I think they're way smarter than that. You know, we go around with blunderbusses. They're sophisticated. They're smart. You know, they're going at it with lasers while we're trundling about with blunderbusses. That's the difference. They have so many other ways, hybrid warfare. You know, warfare in the gray zone, as it's called, to achieve their objectives. We don't even know what those things are.
No, it's interesting. I mean, most of the wars of the history, a lot of them were territory, trade routes, resources, you know, things like that. It was commercial. These are commercially based wars.
Well, and so it
is
now. The Belt and Road Initiative, the String of Pearls ports, that sort of thing. Yeah.
But in terms of war and history, it's only fairly recently that they've been ideological. Or we had a slogan like making the world safe for democracy or the arsenal of democracy or any other thing they could do. Wars used to be, you know, in the old-fashioned days, you know, for territory, resources, and trade routes. And they were very blatant about it and very honest and open about it.
It's way more than that. I mean, with the Chinese advancements in artificial intelligence, 5G, domination of the semiconductor chip business again, they're taking over. What do we think the metaverse is? It's the Chinese takeover of social media around the world, including in America. Once they control social media, once they control the media writ large, this is gray zone. This is warfare, 21st century hybrid warfare. This is not just planes, tanks, you know, and ships, although a hypersonic glide vehicle, you know, armed with a nuclear payload could be a problem, yes, still. But what they're doing is so much more sophisticated than that. Mm-hmm. You know, I just had a briefing yesterday. Blew my mind, 3 hours plus, on the Chinese development of holographic technology, hologram technology, to be inserted, to be used with social media, with TVs, with any kind of flat screen. So much that they're involved in, and we were just not.
You only have a minute and a half left. This is fascinating. it'd be interesting, you know, to know if anybody's formulating a plan at least or something to combat this, of the you know, people that would study China, the people that would find out what's going on, the spies that we should be spying on them, you know, the different advancements, the counters, you know, for everything there should be a counter to it. And if social media is being completely co-opted by China, I've heard about this Meta stuff. I don't know a whole lot about it yet. But then you get into what China does in terms of behavioral conditioning and points for right thinking. And, you know, everything is, you know, it's not just a vaccine passport, but it's a passport for everything.
It's total, complete surveillance of a civilian population. It is using a combination of artificial intelligence, 5G capability of transmitting data. It is, again, hologram technology. If you can hologram every single person on your street, front, back, side, up and down at any moment, 24/7, and know what they're doing, where they're going, there's no more individual liberty. This is where the Chinese are going, and we have no clue.
Well, let's be only about 25 seconds. Let's pick it up next week. I'm going to put this on my calendar. 10-second warning. I'm going to put this on my calendar, but I would be very curious to know the extent you know, give you a chance to think about it. And if you want to cover this, which I would love to, of how exactly you do total surveillance of a civilian population and why that's necessarily valuable to a government, why they have to go to such extremes to do that. What does that kind of control get them? I mean, really the limits of where this goes with it. It's all stuff we've been warned about, but it's here. So let's find out as much as we can. If that sounds good, I'll talk to you off the air, Claire, and we'll see what we can come up with on that. But
We really need to talk about that.
Yeah, that'd be good. All right, let's do that for next week. All right, we're out of time. Thank you, everybody, for a wonderful show. And back tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock Central, 7 o'clock Eastern, 5 Mountain, 4 Pacific, and the rest of the world. You know, catch a podcast or stay up late. Greg Pengels for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. We have a brand new website coming out, writeyourlaws.com. It's been totally redone. It's absolutely fantastic. It's be easier to write legislation, to send it, share it, find out what we do. And there's just so many things happening here. I can't tell you how exciting it is. And that's at www.writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws. Thank you, everybody. And I will talk to you folks on this for today. We'll talk next week. Everybody else tomorrow morning, 6 o'clock.
Have a good day.